from Limitless Coffee CEO Matt Matros, Grammy Award-winning gospel singer Darius Brooks, and our resident philosopher, Professor Al Genie. Now, here's your host, a man who is the original fidget spinner, Justin Kaufman.
That's good. All I do is spin, 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 then fidget, 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 spin, spin, spin. I'm the ultimate distraction. Welcome to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We, like everybody else in this listening area, is waiting with bated breath to see if Anthony Rizzo gets beaned on his first pitch, and he doesn't. Instead, he hits a home run, a leadoff home run for Anthony Rizzo in the face. Now the best part about that, Pete, the best part is that the Padres are going to be like, we should have hit him. Oh, wow. What a storybook kid. He's got to lead off the All-Star game, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Is he leading in the votes when it comes to the All-Stars? I would think he'd be the number one first baseman. I mean, there's probably better statistical first basemen, but are there any that had as much success last year in this, you know, especially what we're seeing right now?
I don't think he's leading, no, actually.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I was looking at the...
Am I forgetting?
Over the weekend, they had, like, Jason Hayward was, like, one of the Cubs' leading vote-getter.
Are there just a million first basemen in the NL that I'm not thinking about?
Was it some? Who's a first
baseman? Adrian Gonzalez
for the
playing?
Who's Nationals?
Yeah, Ryan Zimmerman is having a great year, but he's Ryan Zimmerman. At a certain point, you're like, okay, so you hit 330 and you've got 18 home runs. Okay. But I would give it, I mean, I don't think there's anybody with as much impact. And I get it, it's only been the last week of the season, but Anthony Rizzo is, I mean, it's getting to the point where it's Casey's, at, you know, like it's like mm-hmm. folklore.
Yeah.
For a cleanup hitter to be able to move to the leadoff and then to have the kind of impact he's having there. Wow. Joe Maddon went from, I don't know what I'm doing, to genius in a week.
I don't know about that, but Anthony Rizzo, one RBI. It's an RBI, RBI.
Right. It's one to nothing right now. Oh, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We have a jam-packed show. Tonight, Matt Matros is going to join us for the download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. That's coming up tonight. Talk with him about his career as the founder of Protein Bar and Limitless Coffee. Talk about brand management, positioning. There's a lot to talk about when, you know, and I guess there's a little bit of a trend in the first week. Ship Bob last week, and this week is Matt Matros. Is the idea of Chicago small business entrepreneurs who are taking on giants. I mean, Protein Bar's competition is the chains, right? Casual fast food, the Subways, other places like that. Limitless Coffee, you're getting to a game of coffee that's all about chains, right? Think about Ship Bob, they're taking on Amazon, Walmart, places like that. So you get the idea that there is an entrepreneurial spirit here in Chicago to take on some of the giants in respective industries. We'll talk with Matt Matros tonight. He'll be my guest. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Professor Al Genie's back. Talk about retirement. We kind of promoted this today. You know, this idea of when it is time to retire. And, you know, we knew what it meant for a generation before us. And then as a generation for me, to be in my 40s, we talk about, geez, I better be ready for retirement. I get to get ready. And then there's a generation behind me that's like, what is that word? Why does everyone keep saying that? Retire? Is that like the tire? Is that about a car? So we'll talk about the meaning of work and the meaning of ending work with Professor Al Genie coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. Also tonight we get, I mean, it's just the way it kind of works out, some great musicians in town. We have a great Israeli guitarist who will be in studio, as well as a great gospel singer from Chicago, Darius Brooks. And then we'll play The Worst tonight with some great women who are great writers in town, Claire Zulke and Erica Reed. So we got a lot going on. We'll also check in Springfield, get an update from some GOP senators about what they expect to do when the special session kicks off tomorrow. So, yeah, I mean, this is a very eclectic show tonight. I feel like it's one of those shows not unlike the Litfest where I think I'm going to ask the gospel singer about special session and the GOP senator about the Israeli independent music scene.
Hey, you know what? The gospel singer might have an answer.
Yeah, right.
Might as well give him a shot.
Yeah, so all that's coming up tonight here on The Download. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We will hit up the carryout. Stay with us. All right, let's do the carryout. All right, here are today's top stories. Governor Rauner spoke at the old Capitol building tonight to stress unity and unveil his new attack ad. No, I kid. But most Democrats in Springfield are upset at the political game of unity one day, political attacks the next. But that's business as usual in Springfield. The speech was 3 minutes and change. Yeah, it's good. You know, he understands the top 40 format. Rauner and the Republicans are pushing a new budget plan that would require a property tax freeze. And who doesn't want that? Right? But there are some that worry that as the state mandates more and more, municipalities won't have ways to pay for things like pensions or schools. But you know what? I got to give credit to Governor Rauner because in essence, he's saying that if the state wants to raise taxes to help pay the budget, then the local village can't also raise taxes, right? So the old adage, damned if you do, damned if you don't, kind of applies. The governor is trying to keep our bill the same. And frankly, that's saying something since every single one of our bills, utilities included, are finding new ways to raise the rates. Although I wonder if the state could learn something from Comcast. 2-year deal, locked in. Don't tell them it's changing. Take away Bravo. Boom. We'd have a surplus, right? But here we go. Let's see if lawmakers can finally govern instead of letting the judges do it. 10 days. Let's synchronize our watches now. Today, there was a joint presser between the vice president and the speaker of the House as they called for a permanent tax reform. Pence said the Internal Revenue Code is twice as long as the Bible with none of the good news. What does that even mean? You mean like there's no turning water into wine stuff or the crucifixion? Or do you just mean it's long and it's hard to understand? I'm so confused. And he calls himself a Christian. You read the Bible and you will be bored and you'll like it. And then not to be outdone, Speaker Ryan told the press the same line verbatim an hour later. What's with the Bible jokes? Is this Sean Spicer's new role? Is he writing Bible jokes? I guess the knock on our current tax code is that it's too big and it's too confusing. Republicans in D.C. want to change that. And you know what? I'm all for it. It seems that the goal of the reform is to make us all pay less, right? The only problem is that doesn't government need more? Is tax reform essentially a way to force the government to spend less, which in this day and age seems more like political ideology than reality? Hey, we'd pay less, but would we? I mean, think about it. I mean, we'd pay less, but we'd also no longer have exemptions and write-offs. So essentially, I don't know, it's a break even. I guess it's less paperwork. One pink sheet, one blue sheet. That's all you need. Again, I'm all for it. I think the tax code should be reformed since it's been the same way for decades. But I always ask the question, who's asking for this? So what else tonight? We got violence, no. Schools, no. Dash cam videos, no. Buying newspapers. Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis said he's quitting acting. What, no more My Left Foot roles left? All right, they've all been played. All right, good for you, buddy. I hope you can method act your way to the grocery store. In weather today, nice. Then it rained, but it's nice. It's cold. It's like San Diego. It's nice. It's really all I got to say about the day. I summed it up in one sentence. At least it's not the West Coast right now. The grounding plains in Phoenix today as the temperature was projected to get up to 120 degrees. California, too, up into the 110s. Well, yes, it's a dry heat. I understand. But, sir, you telling me you don't sweat in 120? In sports, the Cubs got a win against the Padres last night, but the game sparked an uproar as the manager of the Padres called on Anthony Rizzo's slide at home as a cheap shot. There have been calls in the media for a suspension, but the Cubs and Major League Baseball insist the slide was clean, so no suspension. So it'll probably work itself out tonight in the form of throwing at Rizzo. Then he'll charge the mound, and then hopefully two old base coaches will get into a wrestling match, because that's really the only time it's fun, when an old guy headlocks another old guy. The rest, you're like, all right. And now it's inevitable. Anthony Rizzo on the first at-bat tonight hits a home run. So, yeah, he's going to get beaned. I don't even know what the rules are anymore. You can't touch the catcher? You can't try to run him over? Man, Pete Rose would have been kicked out of baseball. Well, instead he got kicked out for something else. Anyway, Cubs picked up on a game on the Brewers last night who lost, so they're now only a game and a half back. Time to turn it on. The White Sox start a three-game set with the Twins tonight in Minnesota. The Sox are hoping youngster Matt Davidson stays hot. 5 homers last week. The Twins were up top the Central but came down to earth after getting swept by the Indians this past weekend. The Twins are in the middle of a slide, so let's keep it going. The Sox didn't play last night, but they lost a half game to the Indians, who won. But back to the Twins. I mean, they've had a great year with a lot of young talent. But, you know, I look at that lineup, and I couldn't even tell you who plays for them. I mean, I know Joe Mauer, right? But after that, what about Greg Gagne? Is Greg Gagne still playing shortstop? Is Danny Gladden? Danny Gladden out left? How about Frankie Viola? Or Bert Blyleven? How about a Kent Herbick? What, Kent Herbick can't get one from the Indians? And that is your 1980s Minnesota Twins. It's currently 7:20-ish, and Jimmy Butler is still on the Bulls. That's good. 2 days and counting to the NBA draft, and speculation is running wild around Butler being traded to Cleveland or Boston for a rebuilding package. I don't know. I'd feel all better about the NBA rebuild if the Bulls front office had experience in that, right? They have experience in it. They do. And besides fluking into Derrick Rose, they have pretty much struck out. So when we compare this to the Cubs, remember that the Cubs went out and spent money to get the best general manager in the business. They paid for his plan. What are we paying for? All right, $12 nachos at the Madhouse. Oh, yeah, and Dwayne Wade, who said, I love it. I love the quotes. He's leaning towards it. He's leaning towards a $24 million option. Sure, it's a good thing to lean towards. He's gonna take less to play for the Bucks. Right. Rumors are swirling that the Bulls are kicking the tires on Andre Iguodala, the Golden State Warriors swingman, who does play the same position as Jimmy Butler. Oh, we've seen this before. Be like Jalen Rose too. Don't do it. And finally tonight, the new Transformers movie opens in Chicago. The marketing team has promised to take over Chicago. I got an idea. Why don't you transform into something that doesn't do that? Right? Chicago's not Hollywood. We don't need to see a guy dressed as Bumblebee taking pictures next to the Apple Store. Save that smelly garbage for Hollywood Boulevard. Ooh, look at that. I did like a little, that's a little statement, right? That's Gary out for June 20th, 2017. Today's the last day of school for Chicago kids. Now go enjoy the summer by sitting on the couch all day playing the iPad. So true. Every parent says, oh, it's summer, let's get out. Tomorrow they'll be like, yeah, go ahead. Let's see what's on Cartoon Network. It starts. Matt Matros from Limitless coming up right after the break. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Well, Pete and I, off air, we're just about ready to have a little debate, so maybe you can help us out here.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'll be the judge.
I heard you mention Anthony judge Rizzo's Justin. Colliding with the catcher last night. Right. Now, I thought, and I watched ESPN SportsCenter last night ad nauseum, saw the replay about 18,000 times. I think he could have avoided the catcher. I think he should have been disciplined. I thought it was a cheap shot.
Yeah. Well, as a guy who did not watch it at all and likes to pass judgment on it like I did, it's Anthony Rizzo. He's got a serial. You got to give him a one pass. I mean, if he had a track record of doing stuff that you felt was sort of one-upping the game, then I could see it being an easier decision. But I'll bet you they went, all right, one-time shot.
Look, I've got a box of the Rizzos in the pantry. They're fine. It's a good cereal. You know, it's good nutrition. But you know what? One thing that I don't – and I wasn't there, obviously. I was here. But I don't know if anybody asked Joe Maddon if – had the roles been reversed, how would he feel about the play?
It feels – it was funny because the Tribune had two headlines this morning that were complete opposite. There were two of their sports reporters, one saying, Matt, you know, that Rizzo should be suspended, and the other one saying, it's clean. Like, so I think that there's, you know, there's a little bit of homerism involved. But I think that any of those situations, I mean, they put it in for Buster Posey, didn't they? Isn't that the whole idea? Like, because they want to protect the catcher.
Oh, you mean when Posey's leg was snapped in half?
Yeah. That's what I mean. How do you not? I mean, it shouldn't even be a judgment call. It should just be like, if that happens, you get a certain punishment.
Agreed.
Well, there we go. We just did the next case. Dun-dun-dun.
I just want to be Rusty the bailiff.
I bought yeah. a refrigerator, and it doesn't work anymore. Dun-dun-dun. All right.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
It's time for the download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank, here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a weekly segment here where we talk shop with Chicago area business owners, because Chicago's got a long history with being an economic engine for not just the Midwest, but for the whole country. And that has not changed as Chicago entrepreneurs continue to grow their businesses. And we wanted them to share their stories to help us better understand ours. Tonight, my guest, CEO who successfully navigated the somewhat impenetrable world of fast casual food, and is trying his hand in another chain-dominated field, coffee. Matt Matros is the founder of Protein Bar, which started right here in Chicago in 2009. Protein Bar is a local chain that branched out successfully to other markets. It's really a Chicago success story. And in 2015, Matros sold part of his stake to start Limitless High Definition Coffee and Tea in the Fulton Market District. And this isn't just a coffee shop, but it's a roaster, and it's a coffee lab, and the goal is to create a new category for coffee, performance. Tonight, we talk categories, we talk brands, and taking on the big dogs. Matt Matros, welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I've been told that I have a face for radio. So this is kind of fitting.
So. It really works out. Yeah. No, I've seen worse, so you're good to go. All right, so let's talk about, I mean, you came to the idea of Protein Bar really in a strange way, but I mean, you were in brand management. You weren't in any sort of retail work or in the restaurant business.
I definitely wasn't. You know, I joke with people that my experience in restaurants is that I had been to them. You know, obviously that was somewhat of a mistake starting one, but the story around Protein Bar was that I grew up heavy. I was the fat kid for the first 22 years of my life, and it didn't help that my name is Matt, which rhymes with fat, because I heard all the jokes in the book, and kids can be pretty brutal. And then at 22, I left my job as a sports agent. I was representing baseball players, and this was in 2001 when the Atkins diet and low carb craze was starting to gain popularity, and it just worked for me. Ended up losing about 60 pounds in about a 7-month period from April to October, doing mostly high protein foods and low carb foods and exercising. And it was tremendously successful for me. And I've kept off most of the weight, you know, being an entrepreneur in the food and beverage industry. And as I've aged, I've put a few pounds back on. But I've kept off most of the weight because of a high protein diet.
At what point do you go, okay, I got this high protein diet, it's changing my life, and the light bulb goes on that you want to invest in that. You want to start a business. You want to go all in.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Malcolm Gladwell, who's a very well-known author right now, he's wrote several books, his biggest one being Blink, but there's another book called Outliers. He talks about the theory of 10,000 hours, and it takes roughly 10,000 hours to develop proficiency in anything. And he uses a couple major examples, a guy named Bill Gates, who didn't just discover Windows. He had coded his entire most of his adult life. And to the point when he got to Harvard, he ended up developing this proficiency, and that led him to creating Windows. And the Beatles weren't just a band that got discovered in Liverpool. They were playing bars around London
and
Liverpool for nights and nights and nights, and they just developed this almost like orchestra type performance. And I felt, for me, my 10,000 hours, my area of genius was around wellness and nutrition. And that's why I turned it into a career or profession. I talk to entrepreneurs all the time, and I always tell them that it's less about finding a profession and more about finding a calling. And for me, that calling was really around entrepreneurship within the wellness and food and beverage space.
Okay, so you're an agent. That's a somewhat entrepreneurial, but I mean, not necessarily running your own business. Mm-hmm. To make it to go towards your calling. I mean, it's not an easy thing. I mean, people who might be listening right now are saying, "Yeah, I've got a calling. I really want to do this, but I don't have the capital. I don't have the money. I don't really have the know-how to jump in and actually execute." So tell us about that. I mean, because you really went high stakes and pretty much everything you had, you put down.
I mean, you kind of nailed it. So I think that is the one innate quality that separates entrepreneurs from those that don't become entrepreneurs. And not to say that being an entrepreneur is the greatest thing ever, but you know, some people are cut from that cloth, and it's that ability to take that leap. But good to your point about risk. For me, I was my worst case scenario of protein bar had failed wasn't so bad. So I looked at it as three things. One, I was going to lose all my entire life savings, which was around 200 grand. Every penny I had ever saved up from the time I was, you know, a kid to the time I was 29 and started the business, I was putting into protein bar. I mean, I was selling baseball cards and video games on eBay, like to scratch together everything I had. So if protein bar failed, I would lose all that money. Number two, I'd have to file personal bankruptcy to wipe away my SBA loan that I got and my lease that I had signed. And number three, I was going to call Kraft Foods, where I had worked, which brought me to Chicago, and say, hey, can I have my very easy six-figure job back? So point being is, like, that's not a worst-case scenario. Right, that's right. Too bad. It's not like I ever said.
But you planned it out. You thought ahead, and you said, okay, yeah. If this doesn't work, I've got a contingency.
I had a contingency. I'll never forget, though, that one of the best days of my life was May 18th, 2009. That was the day we opened our first store. And I remember, although my contingency was going back to work at Kraft Foods, that day, as I'm sitting looking at the lines of people coming in and giving me money for something that I basically created out of nothing, I thought to myself, I'll never go back to work for anyone else. Even if this failed, it means I'll do something else for me. But again, entrepreneurship isn't for everyone. But for those that it is, they feel it and they sort of know it.
Well, I mean, to be in that situation and to have success the way you had success, I mean, for Protein Bar to hit a perfect wave in 2009, where, you know, you're competing at a time with other fast casual places, and I think of, you know, the big chains, the fast food places, more like a Subway or shops like that, for a Loop Lunch Rush or what have you. But there seemed to be this perfect timing for you that there were trends that were happening in this, and not just this country, but around the world, about eating healthy, about changing diet, and people were testing the waters when it came to South Beach and Atkins and other places. So how much of, you know, was it right timing, right place for you, and how much did you put into the brand to let people know that that stuff that you're doing at home, that the diets that you're playing with, the stuff you're looking up online, this is that manifestation?
Well, the answer is that it was 100% yes to both of those things. It was 100% luck and timing, no doubt about it. I got very lucky and fortunate that it was right around the time that people became aware and cognizant of what they were putting. And we're still in what I like to call the second or third inning of the healthy lifestyle game. And then the second part was, yes, around the branding. I'm a very meticulous, detail-oriented, everything matters kind of guy. So when I was building the company, every detail mattered, whether it was building the website or the interior design or the architecture or the chairs I picked out or the blenders I used or the scoops that I picked or the t-shirts that I had or the colors. I mean, I literally could go on and on. And it's funny, I joke when I walk into a store and they'll nitpick little things, and I'll say every single detail I contemplated, whether it was, why is that outlet over there, or why is that ice machine that brand versus another?
Does that become harder to do when you start to expand, when there's a second and third and a fourth and a fifth protein bar? Do you feel like, you know, like, hey, I can't make every decision for every place?
I think that's the naivety/neuroticism that entrepreneurs have. And I think it's just part of my game, my DNA. It's, you know, we all as human beings should do what we're, you know, I mentioned genius at, and that's, I'm not good at that many things, but that's sort of one of the things that I like to think that I'm sort of genius at, is the holistic picture of something and trying to translate that holistic picture into commerce. So something that people would be willing to spend money on.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break and we'll stay on time tonight. Matt Matros is my guest. He's a founder of Protein Bar, which he started in 2009. We come back, let's talk about another transition is we go to limitless high definition coffee and tea. That's the business now. And essentially all of the, what you had to do to jump in on Protein Bar, you had to do again with limitless. And we'll talk about, as an entrepreneur, what it's like staring at the same cliff again in your life. Matt Matros, my guest on the Download in Chicago Business here on WGN. Stay with us.
It's business time. It's business.
It's a Download on Chicago Business here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Matt Matros in studio. He's the founder of Protein Bar. He's also the founder of Limitless High Definition Coffee and Tea, which is in the Fulton Market District. You know, we're talking about business. I mean, this is the segment, the Download on Chicago Business, and you were able to sustain for years now. I mean, it's 2017. A Protein Bar franchise, not just here, but in other cities as well. I mean, why move out of that? Why not stay with that? Why not ride that till you're competing with Arby's You know, you're in every train station in America. Mm-hmm. What is it about leaving a job and moving to the next one?
Well, the goal is that hopefully we are competing with the Arby's and the Subways and the McDonald's of the world. It just wasn't within my skill set to be the person that was going to run the organization. The organization had just outgrown me.
And do you have to recognize that as an entrepreneur, or do other people recognize it for you?
Yes.
They're like, we love you, man, but this is what we're going to do. We're going to,
It's not for, so it did have to come with a little bit of an ego, because there was, I just wasn't performing, and I noticed that. And little things started happening that weren't me. Number one was I stopped, as the company got bigger, we got to about 24 locations across three markets. I stopped wanting to go into the stores. I stopped wanting to talk to the guests. I stopped wanting to talk to the team members that we had. And that was kind of like a telltale sign that running an organization is different than being a restaurateur, at least for me. And that's when it started becoming not fun. I also sold a good part of the business to a big private equity firm, so I had a boss for the first time in many years. And so that was a little bit of a shock for me, especially for someone who's not a great employee.
I mean, you still have ties, but is it hard for you to let go? Because as we talked about being an entrepreneur, and you feel that your genius is being able to look at everything and set things up in the store and contemplate what the scenarios that are there, from the wallpaper to the outlet. Is it hard for you, and does it continue to be hard, to sort of let that part of it go?
You know, I don't have children. I'm not married. But I think the best analogy I like to use is, you know, everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you sold a protein bar. That's your baby. And I say, yeah, well, my baby grew up and went off to college, and now I'm going to have another baby. Whether or not that's actually true when I have children, we'll see. But that's sort of how I feel. Is it hard? Not really. I actually thought it would be much harder.
Really?
You know, I'm still on the board, so I'm still actively engaged in the business. I know what's going on. I see the daily numbers. I walk in as a customer pretty much every day of the River North store. And I root for the brand. I'm still the guy that goes out to bars and is the protein bar guy. So that's kind of fun and exciting.
I guess doing radio interviews as the protein bar
exactly.
guy.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Right. But it's just, it's not really mine anymore. And I'm totally okay with that. And I think part of the reason why I'm okay with it is twofold. One, because I just had to come to grips with it, number one. And number two, I wake up every day and I think about selling coffee. So that paradigm shift, whereas before I woke up every day, how do I sell a healthy burrito? And that's just sort of how I am wired as a human being, right or wrong. I mean, maybe that's arguable.
Well, I mean, let's make that transition. I mean, I kind of joked in the beginning of it sort of being somewhat impenetrable, the idea of getting into fast casual. I mean, there's so many options in so many places, but Protein Bar was able to carve out a niche. So what do? You go find another somewhat impenetrable field, coffee. I mean, there are the big chains right here on Michigan Avenue that are even doubling down and investing in roasters and other places. And then there's a myriad, you know, neighborhood coffee shops that also are getting into the game of really being able to deliver a high quality product. Why get into coffee? What is it about Limitless that differentiates itself from a very crowded field?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I didn't even drink coffee about 15 months ago. And after I left Protein Bar, I was traveling around and I found myself in Indonesia, random.
Sure.
on a coffee farm. And, you know, a lot of the world's coffee comes from Indonesia. A lot of people don't realize the biggest island in Indonesia is called Java. Right. So that's where that name comes from. And I was touring this coffee farm more as a curious capitalist and less as a coffee consumer. And I thought how filthy, literally dirty, the coffee farm was. And I was surprised that if more Americans knew how dirty the coffee process was, I don't think they would consume as much of the product. Came back to the U.S. a couple months later. And, you know, like any entrepreneur, I sort of had that moment where I was like, there's got to be a better way. So I started researching. And actually found that the coffee farm that I had seen is representative of roughly about 60% of the world's coffee farms. It's what's called natural process. The bean gets picked from a tree. And coffee beans, a lot of people don't realize, are similar to cherries, like actual American or Michigan cherries, where there's a pit. Well, it's the pit of the coffee cherry that's actually the bean that we get to know. Well, in order for that bean to be exposed, traditionally coffee farmers would leave the bean out. And it would take 3, 4, 5 months for that fruit to ferment. Well, during that process, it's being exposed to dirt and rain and wind and worse off bird poop and bugs and all kinds of nasty stuff. Well, the wet wash process, which is the beans that we import, are beans that are actually physically washed at the source. So they're washed at the source farm. So for us, it's mostly Central and South America. And then they're soaked overnight, and the fruit falls off, and then they're sent to us. And then when we get it, we air roast it. So only about 20% of coffee roasters are air roasters. So what air roasting does is actually sucks away all the dirt contaminants that come in the process. And then we brew our cold brew with reverse osmosis water. So we like to say that we have the cleanest coffee and tea in the world.
And all that, and you know that as an entrepreneur, all that stuff is great. I mean, that is going to be the stuff that technically yeah, everyone wants to hear, especially when they invest in any sort of product. But how do you make that connection to someone who just wants coffee like that? I mean, and what you've done, which is really ingenious, is again with the branding, you want to create a new category.
Yeah.
This is performance. This is something entirely different than the coffee that you get from Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts or other places. This is a different category of drink.
But that's the risk, though. So it's, for me, it works. Like with Protein Bar, that was my diet for 8 years, so I knew it worked. But I didn't know it was going to work for everyone until I put $500,000 into the first store by Sears Tower and opened my doors. And by the way, even then, we didn't do that well. It took about 8 months. But same thing with Limitless. I'm a believer. In fact, I'm betting most of my net worth that people are going to start caring about clean beverages in the same way 15, 20 years ago they started caring about clean produce. So they started eating organic or all natural. Or 10 or 12 years ago, they started caring about clean meat and poultry, so they started eating hormone free. And I think, you know, the number two and three most consumed beverages in the world are coffee and tea. So I think people will start care. At least I'm
betting. That's the bet. The bet is that there'll be a consciousness that will grow and that will change our habits. Is that a good bet as an entrepreneur? That's really something it's even beyond what the product is.
Yeah.
You're betting on the fact that we are going to change as consumers our habits.
This bet is a little bit more mitigated than Protein Bar because 65% of people drink coffee every day. So that's one. Protein Bar, I was just so new and emerging. I literally just made it up. So that was a bigger risk. But number three, what we don't realize is that we already use coffee as a performance tool, really. Yeah, yeah. But we kind of do it begrudgingly. Like, think about those old, you know, comic strips of Kathy, the, you know, comic strip that says, "Ooh, don't talk to me till I have my coffee," or whatever it is. Like,
right.
But that's why we drink coffee, for performance enhancing. I'm just trying to flip the switch on that and show that it can actually drive even better performance with a certain type. And oh, by the way, embrace it. Embrace it in the same way that we embraced Red Bull back in the early 2000s, and embrace it in the same way that we embrace anything that helps us feel like a better version of ourselves.
You know, I've always get back to your core and what you went to school for and everything when you talk about brand management, but I've always been fascinated by places like Starbucks where they're not selling coffee, they're selling an experience. They're selling sitting down in the fluffy chairs at a, you know, and having a cup of coffee. They're selling an experience. It sounds like it's even beyond the product. You're selling performance, or you're selling habit. I mean, when you think about how you develop a brand or put that brand out, is it more than just the product that you're selling?
You're totally right. So it's all about that positioning. So in marketing, there's a positioning statement. Marketing 101 would say your brand is blank, is the blank that blanks because of blank. So using Tide. Tide is the brand of detergent that gets your clothes cleaner because we have X years of science. I kind of made that up. But for every product or brand or anything that you ask people to buy, you first need to ask them, what are they not going to buy so that they can buy your product, and then why? So with Protein Bar, what are you not going to buy? Chipotle. Why? Because we have half the calories. What are you not going to buy? Subway. Because we have half the calories. Limitless, what are you not going to buy? Well, it's all your other coffee consumption. And why? Well, because our beans are almost free of toxins and they make you feel better. Whether or not people believe that or care about it is a whole other story.
Right,
there's still people who go to McDonald's and Chipotle every day, and there's still going to be people that go to Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts every day. It's just how big that market can be. Only time will tell.
For you as a Chicago entrepreneur who's investing in another Chicago company here at Limitless, and you could do it anywhere. I mean, you've seen, as you mentioned with Protein Bar, I mean, you're at 3 markets now. Mm-hmm. Why? What is it about Chicago that developed you and keeps you here?
Yeah, I think Chicago is the best kept secret in America from a business perspective. Of course, the city gets a lot of heat, especially recently. But I'll tell you, I can walk into City Hall, which I do pretty frequently. I was there last week, and navigate my way and have a business permit in hours. I mean, and I've done business in Arlington, Virginia, Washington, D.C., Denver, Boulder, Oak Brook. Chicago's still the easiest place to do it. And is it easy because I know it? Maybe. Well, that's part of the reason why I'm still here. But in New York, L.A., San Francisco, there's just a competitiveness and a – in a it's a harder market to be a big thing or to have to get attention, really. Mm-hmm. And I think in Chicago, people are just open. They care. The friendly confines of Wrigley Field for a reason. I mean, we're a friendly market in the Midwest. We want to help. You know, rising tide raises all ships. And yeah, there are competitors in anything that you do, but I don't feel like it's a competitiveness with a mean streak. It's competitiveness with a friendliness.
Matt Matrus, limitless high definition coffee and tea, of course, also the founder of Protein Bar, which he started back in 2009. My guest tonight on the Download on Chicago Business. Matt, thanks for coming in, sharing your story.
That was really awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, that I mean, Protein Bar, it's amazing to think that many stores now, 24 stores. And I agree. I feel like with the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank, we can get at. I love that, the brain tease that is sort of marketing 101. You know, like if you do this and it's this and this and this. I once had the good fortune of somebody in Chicago doing a one-hour marketing presentation, like it was like pro bono to the staff where I was working, and they explained how Apple came to fruition, Starbucks, like that concept that they're not selling coffee, they're selling a home away from home that you can sink into the – that was the whole concept of Starbucks, not necessarily the one on Michigan Avenue where it's just like, you know, boom, 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 boom. But this idea that they were selling, hey, come in the puffy chair, sit down – and have a break from your day, a home away from home, that they don't even care about the coffee.
And having worked at a Starbucks, I would like to say, move on. I was sick of a lot of those people.
the brand people are like, it's working, but the baristas are like, it's not working, get out.
You know, dude, you've been in that puffy leather chair for quite a while now.
This is not your home. This is your home away from home. Get to stepping. Thanks, Rob. It's a Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up later in the show, gospel singer Darius Brooks, Grammy Award winner, Chicago Southside and Westside Church singer. I mean, amazing guy's going to be part of Make Music Chicago, the all-day marathon festival that will be happening in Chicago tomorrow. So we'll talk with Darius Brooks about it, not only the performance but his career. Also tonight, Israeli-born guitarist Yonatan Gott will be here. He is performing at Consolation as part of the Israeli music series, so we'll be talking with him. Considered one of the best guitarists in the world. He was named Best Guitarist in New York City 2013 by the Village Voice. One of these days, my next guest will get that distinction. He's been trying for a long time to get the Village Voice to recognize his guitar playing, right? No.
I got reviewed in the Village Voice once.
There you go. Okay. There you go. So tonight we're talking about retirement. Back on May 1st, we, for International Workers' Day, we talked about work-life balance and what work means.
Yeah.
We had a great conversation. People called in, 312-981-7200. So we thought we would talk tonight about when work ends.
When work ends.
The end of retirement. Sorry, Al.
No.
I want to give you a proper introduction.
I'm very sorry.
No. But so, you know, as we talk about, you know, everything, retirement for generations before us, that's a given. Retirement for my generation is sort of anxiety-ridden. Mm. And for a generation below us, they don't even know what it is.
They don't know what they're doing.
And Professor Al Genie is our resident philosopher here. He's a professor of business at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. Professor, good to see you.
Always wonderful to be here, right. Even though it's freezing both in the studio and outside.
I know. I don't understand. It got real cold in the studio, but that's okay.
Chicago, if you don't like the weather today, just hang around for 8 hours. It'll be different.
All right, so let's talk about this when we talk about when the work ends.
Yeah, and I think retirement is a big issue, and it's not just a small issue right now. In fact, I think it's a compound, complex social problem that we're going to have to address as a society at all kinds of levels. And I think there are four parts to it, really. First part is the baby boomers. Moi. Actually, I'm not a baby boomer. I'm a victory baby. I was conceived and born just before in 1944, so that makes me a victory,
victory
baby.
That's
somewhere,
right. That's right.
In great America, my father is an officer. My mother got to visit him, and c'est moi. Okay.
Right.
But the middle, we're talking about the baby boomers, which was the largest working class until the millennials and Generation X came along. And now this, it's kind of a meta problem. The successful baby boomers now, what do we do? We're gonna have to retire. How do we handle retirement? And it may be a meta problem because will I be happy in retirement? How do I look at retirement, et cetera, et cetera? So this is the high end of the issue. And then there's another part of this middle class who's always seen the job as themselves and has always perceived work as this is what I who I am, this is what I do.
Right.
And now they have to decide, do I really retire or do I want to keep working? And now there's a double problem connected to that. We're living longer. So what do we do? And can we outlive our money? Can we, will we have enough money to retire? So that's the one end, and that seems like two problems that are really real. But then there's a third problem that is really catastrophic. And this is a sad, sad statistic. One-third of heads of households over the age of 55 have no pension, no retirement savings, and no options at all.
And to make this clear, I mean, this isn't we're not selling financial services.
Right.
A lot of times when anyone wants to talk about retirement, it's about money management. But here, Al, what we want to talk about is the mental and the moral.
Right.
I mean, this idea that, you know, we set up a society that at a certain point we would get to a certain age and we would retire. We would be able to live off the money that we had accrued. That doesn't seem to be the case when it comes to a generation that's working right now and a generation below.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a struggle, not just financial struggle, but there's going to be a moral struggle.
Right. But I think it's wrong not to recognize the financial struggle as well, because yeah, it's like this wonderful show. I don't know if you've seen it on HBO. Carl Reiner was talking about aging, and the title of the show is "If Your Name's Not in the Obituaries, Get Up, Have Breakfast." It's a wonderful analysis, right? So if you're not in the obits, get up and have breakfast. But they're talking about the living past 90 and living vitally, and it opens up with Tony Bennett at 92 still singing "I Left My Heart in San Francisco" with great fervor and mm-hmm. great passion. Yeah, but you got to have health. You've got to have mobility, and you got to have a little money. So I want to talk about the psychology and the philosophy of retirement, but you really have to think about that money. If you're one-third of the households in America can't even think about retirement, what does that say about your mental about working, right?
But it also affects, I mean, I think about my generation in the 40, you know, 42 years old, and you start to get to a point where you're like, I see all the commercials that are on between innings or, you know, even on this radio station, you're like, I better start putting money away.
Where's your 401k?
Yeah, exactly. You get to a certain point where, you know, the anxiety, it gets ramped up about what's going to happen in 20, 30 years from
now. Right. And just to fulfill the last part here, there's also this notion of the workforce itself. And even though the employment rate is at the lowest it's been in years, 4.2, 4.4 approximately right now, they can't find the right people to fill the jobs. So in some sense, a lot of people are continuing working. There's a wonderful statistic by this man said, yeah, I just hired three guys, and two of them are 75. You know, think about that. Two of them are 75. Now, what do we do? How do I keep my business going? What about the economy itself? So on one end, you have this angst about, should I retire? What is retirement? How do I handle retirement? Then you have the financial concerns. And then you have a workforce that can't reduplicate itself and can't keep a continuous production.
Professor Al Genie is my guest tonight in studio. We're talking about when and if we retire. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation with our resident philosopher. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200. We're talking about something near and dear to all our hearts, retirement. We talked in the beginning of the summer, actually May 1st, about work-life balance, what work means. Now we talk about what to do when work ends, and if it ever ends.
If it ever ends. First of all, I think it's really important to understand, we talked about this on the break. Retirement is a new phenomenon. It's a post-industrial phenomenon.
Yeah, I would think it was old. I was thinking, I wonder what they did back in the ancient Greece.
They died. You worked and you died. And there was a reason for having lots of children. They had to take care of you. There was a reason. You always had to do something. There was no such thing as a retired farmer. I mean, you had something to do. So the industrial complex allowed people to come into cities, but you still had to work. You never ended the work. My grandfather stopped working at 92 when he was working at my father and my uncle's factory, and the insurance guy says, you don't get him out of the building today, I cancel every policy you have.
Well, where does it come from, this idea that, I mean, you say it's post-industrial. I mean, is it an idea not only to respect the worker, but also to flush the worker system?
No, well, flush the workers out. There was a turnover, but there was also this. Remember, for my grandfather's generation, retirement was this gift you got after a life of labor. And that was the point. Around retirement, they held it out to you. This is a terrible job, but keep going. You'll get this. There's even this argument going on right now in our city, in our state. You may have heard about this
pensions,
retirement policy.
Right.
You know, the teachers. Teachers made a deal with the devil. I'll take a bad salary, but I'm going to get a good retirement bonus. And now that's being taken away from them as well. That's simplifying the issue. But retirement was the apple you got for being a good person, and you gave yourself to the company store, et cetera, et cetera. And so people look forward to that. My father knew the day he was going to retire. By the way, ironically, he was miserable the second day he was retired. Absolutely miserable the second day he retired.
Of course.
And hated it. But you knew the day we retired. But suddenly there was a shift. Retirement, like as George Bernard Shaw said, was like a long vacation with all your family members that you didn't like. That is, it was living hell. And so retirement now became this question of, well, we can retire, but should we retire? And what's retirement about? And what are we going to retire to? But now I've got a college education, or I've got a good job, and I've always done this. Why do I want to retire? So there's this conflict going on. What do you do? When I did the book years ago, My Job Myself, I interviewed people who are retired, and they call themselves formerly employed. And what do you do? I was formerly, they had no sense of themselves.
And I was going to say, if you tie that to yourself, then it's former self.
That's right, former self. And so who am I now? In fact, Margaret Mead said in This Society women retire, men die. Because they didn't know what to do with themselves anymore. But I think the whole notion of retirement, we thought of it as one of the big life markers. And think about this: death, divorce, downsizing, disability, moving, and retirement. Did you really want to face that? Are you over? I just went to a wonderful function Saturday night at the 50th anniversary of dear friends. And all the gang was there. All the neighborhood was there, so on and so forth. And some I haven't seen in 30 years. I couldn't recognize them. But we were suddenly old. And I was the only one working. What are you doing now? And half were happier than spit. And
is there judgment to you that you're still working? I mean, what are you doing?
What are you doing? That's right. They said, what are you doing? Yeah. And then the other half went, oh, good, you're still working. Don't quit. So there's this ambivalence in our society, because if you're successful, why do you quit? But then there's this also feeling, part of this is a much larger philosophical question. As my dear friend Ron Green has said, we're beginning to look at death differently and life differently. Justin, at one time, before World War II, people died, the average age was 42 years old, 44 years old. And in the turn of the century, the average age in America at the turn of the century, 1900, not 2000. Mm-hmm. I was at both, by the way, but nevertheless, in 1900, the average age was 37. And then in 2000, it was 73. Think about that. About that shift. Men and the Civil War, and they're now saying 730,000 individuals died. Most of them died not from wounds, but from dysentery, typhoid, or bacteria, et cetera, et cetera. It was so easy to die. Now people are living longer. In fact, the statistics are showing that we're gaining 2 years for every 10 years in a generation. So children born in 2000, unless they get radical cancer or a terrible heart, can expect to live to 100. Now, what does that mean?
Well, what's it mean spiritually and mentally, the idea of what you do when you're done working? And then, like you said at the beginning, we're not tone deaf to the idea that also spreads the money thin, that also financially puts a lot of stress on you. There's a lot that goes into it that's real. This idea that, that the system was set up for you to pass on after 10 years of being retired, not to live for 40 years.
Social Security itself has got this problem right now. That lockbox was never supposed to be that big. Who knew that people were going to live that long? There was a terrible story in the Tribune 3 months ago about a woman who had finally died at the age of 76, I believe. But when she retired, she only had $1,200 in Social Security and $190 a month in the retirement fund. So that was, $1,400 a month. And so for 7 years, she lived in her van and drove for low-paying jobs from city to city, or state to state. And she said, at least I'm alive and I have something to do. But it was enforced retirement. People, I understand the surgeon who has said to me, when did you stop operating? He said, the minute my hand shook. Of course, right? You understand the retired baseball player at 27, right? Because he lost their arm.
Lost the skills.
But again, this notion of who are we if we don't have a job? And can we the hardest transition, I think you have to work at retirement. And all the reading that I've done, you've got to be able to find yourself in retirement. And when you don't, you not only lose the purpose of your life, you lose yourself.
Well, let's talk about directly to people who are probably in that predicament or in that situation right now, where maybe they've retired and they're listening right now and they have the money situation is not maybe front and center for them, but they're in a position where purpose is in question or don't really know what to do with their days. I mean, I think of my family members and I know that are retired, and there's a lot of, you know, I don't want to say depression, but there's, you know, there's
some angst about,
there's what? Angst about the idea that they're not as useful as they, maybe they once right. were. So, I mean, what do you say to the people like that? I mean, what do they have to do to get themselves out of
right.
situations where purpose is on the right. line?
Let's back up again. I said new notion of dying. That is, we're living longer, and so we have to look at life and yeah. life. So it's not that you're going to be dead by your 36 anymore. You're going to probably, you know, you're probably going to live vitally until you're 75 or 80, so on and so forth. But in living longer, and because of health issues, because we eat better, my God, come on. My grandfather, who did live to 92, looked like he was 92 when he was 42. I mean, he had the same physical stature. He looked like Pope John the 23rd. I swear to God, we thought we were going to give him a job as a body double there for a while, right? But he looked the same way he did. And now we have to look about the fact that we have other lives now. There's been lots and lots of studies. Gail Sheehy and the psychologists have done mm-hmm. this. You know, from 25 to 45, to talk about adults, that's when career, families, partners, you know, making it really happens. And then 45 to 65, you know, before menopause and menopause occurs, but also that's the age of mastery. You become, you know, you become the full professor. You become the critical DJ.
Yeah,
you
right,
become
right,
the real. And then after 65, we thought it's over, but it's not true anymore.
You got to change, though. I mean, all that has to shift.
That has to shift. And one of the wonderful benefits is we're finding out that these old myths about age are really wrong. And part of it is good health and medicine. You have to absolutely guarantee that fact, right? Absolutely guarantee the fact. By the way, what killed my grandfather was two bottles of wine a day. You know, again, 92. It took up right away. And so I'm trying to follow in that perspective. But think about the old myth that people are old at 65. And that's the beginning of death at 65, right? That's not true anymore. I mean, people are vital. People are playing golf. People are doing things. People are still functioning. The second myth is that most older people are chronically in poor health. That's also not true anymore. This new understanding of life. Yes, you've had a valve put in. Yes, I've had, you know, the iris fix. Yes, I've had
But you're still playing handball.
But I'm still playing handball. Right. I've had three back surgeries myself. I had three back surgeries in the last 3 years. Right. And thank God for that. You know, thank you, Northwestern Hospital. It's right around the corner, right? I want a deep appreciation for that. And Dr. Sapolsky. But we're not chronically ill all the time. Third thing, that older minds are not as bright and flexible as younger minds. Oh, yeah. Mel Brooks, I just saw Mel Brooks 3 weeks ago at the Chicago Theater in Young Frankenstein. He did an hour and a half of shtick that I was exhausted from laughing from, right? And he didn't want to get off the stage. He was alive.
Right.
He was rejuvenated with every laughter that came back at him. So I think to say that, you know, they're not bright and flexible anymore, there are a lot of things. You know, he's not going to play NFL football. He's not going to play basketball.
Right, but everything that you're playing to and talking about really falls under this idea of debunking
right.
what we know of
right.
aging and what we know of retirement.
Right.
So if that's going to happen, we'll talk about it after the news here, but if that's going to happen, do we have to have a committee? Do we have to change? How do we shift the paradigm? How do we relook?
Well, there's
at
a difficult dilemma.
Retirement aging.
There's a difficult dilemma. I think using dilemma correctly, it's a choice between equal power, but you got to go one way or another. And the real problem is, yes, we don't have to retire, but should we retire? When do we pass the baton?
Right.
And when do we keep the baton for our own self?
773 says, love retirement. I'm writing, painting, mentoring, swimming, learning to play an instrument.
Yep.
Don't have a lot of money, but my cost of living is radically reduced.
Right. Absolutely. And by the way, the single best thing you could do, learn a language.
Really?
Because it forces your logic, your math skills, and to reinterpret reality. Yes.
Well, there you go. All right. Professor Al Genie is a professor of business at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, Chicago. He is also the resident philosopher here on The Download. He joins us, I would say, regularly on the show. All right. So we will continue the conversation here on The Download. Thanks, Rob. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. Coming up, Senator Jason Berkman is going to join us from Bloomington, Republican senator. We're going to preview the special session, which starts up tomorrow in Springfield. I'm sure retirement pensions will be on the...
That's exactly what it's about, friends.
In studio with me tonight, Professor Al Genie, a resident philosopher, professor of business at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. We're talking about retirement and really... You know, as we left the conversation before the news, it was about what can, now that we've laid out the concept that what we know about retirement, what we know about aging, has to be changed, meaning the myths don't hold
we
up
have
anymore.
To change. Right, we do have to change.
One of the ways is to rebrand. I mean, this idea that it's not called retirement anymore. Right. Call it something else.
I think you have to look at it as a second adulthood. What does second adulthood allow
us? Second adulthood, there we go.
I mean, clearly, as Dan Hampton once said when he retired, he says, I have no regrets, I left everything on the field. And I no longer could do it anymore. And you've got to recognize that and walk away. And in fact, because you're both sports fan, some of the most pathetic examples of athletes have been the guys won't give it up. You know, right. We're really great, and they take that extra year or two. We understand it's for the money, but the grace and the beauty is right. gone, right? They right. just can't right. do it anymore, right. and it's really a shame. And so, all right, so maybe a transition. So I can't, you know, I'm not going to be a weightlifter anymore. What else can I do? Maybe I can be a trainer. And I think we have to relook at what adulthood is. And I think we have to relook at what human wisdom is. And Abraham Maslow said a long time ago, wisdom is the accumulation of knowledge and experience and living long enough to reflect on it, to make sense out of it, and to apply it to our lives. That means being old. That's why Doogie Howser's of the world, I don't want a 14-year-old brain surgeon. I want the 42-year-old brain surgeon that's done it 1,200 times, right? I want somebody with experience. And so I think we have to look at that. So I think we have to look at the second adulthood. If you have your health, if you still have
all the things we talked
about,
right.
those fires, right. then can you do this? And I think the second adulthood allows us, I think, first of all, to overcome our fear of irrelevance. We're no longer saying, will I make it? Who am I? You know who you are. You could just do it. You know you are. It's again, going back to Mel Brooks. He walks out on stage. He knows who he is. He's done this shtick forever, and he knows how to put his brand out there. You're not worried about failure. You've overcome the fear of failure, and that's the next part. And then to give up, the willingness to give up the tyranny of the dream. I want to be somebody. I want to be something. You are somebody. You are something. You've done this forever. You're still, I must admit, as a senior professor, I never thought I'd be teaching this long, but there are senior professors, you realize you keep them because they're a repository of a certain cachet
yeah,
of
right.
knowledge you're not
right.
going to get any other
right.
place, right? And that's also true for the tool and die maker.
And for the jokes. I mean, for the jokes. We love when our old professors make jokes.
That's right, all the time. And and in September, we'll talk about that some
yeah,
more.
Right, right.
And I think age gives us the ability to put away our illusions, put away our false hopes, put away our excessive desires.
I'm really digging on the idea of a second adulthood. Like, if there was a way to rebrand, I mean, Matt Matros was in here. He's a brand
right.
management guy at 7:30. I mean, this concept that retirement as we know it is something that even, I mean, as much as it means to one generation, it means something entirely different to another. And even to my generation, it's become a political
right.
A hotbed of
it's
the
hotbed,
idea of who's
right.
paying for what, when. I mean, if you could find a way to rebrand the way that we live our adult lives in sections,
in
I feel like
right.
that's a great way to start.
In fact, in some sense, I always thought that young college professors are required to write all these articles, write all these books, and they're young, they don't know anything. I would, when I become dean of the universe, I am going to say all young professors go to the library for 20 years, and we do not talk to students, you do not talk to anybody, you just read, study, and publish books. Then the older professors come back and teach because they have something to say.
Yeah, right.
They have something to offer. And by the way, this new look at retirement means you can keep the same job, but you could do different parts of it. My wonderful son, George Sobolski at Northwestern, you know, he's saying, when do I quit surgery? He's this gifted person who's done these surgeries again and again. I said, George, you don't want to quit now. Even if you can't do the surgery anymore, you need to be the teacher to teach others to do that surgery. In fact, you have a greater affect being a teacher than you do being a surgeon. As a surgeon, you do
yeah.
four a day. As a teacher, you do 20 a day or multiply.
I think that, I mean, they're onto something. I mean, obviously, we're not going to be able to push this through our imaginary
no,
Senate and Congress.
But it's also...
But there's something there, this idea that if we could figure out a way for, as we get older, to find work that is suitable for those that have lived a life and be able to compensate in that regard, to then have finances for a second adulthood, that would be like our texter said, a radically smaller
absolutely.
You know, quality or not quality of life, but radically reduced cost of living. I mean, just this idea that there are different ways if we all come together.
Right.
How do we do it, Al? How do we change the world?
And our texter said, "I'm painting. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. That's great. And so you're involved in that." But sometimes our hobbies aren't enough. And what we're now finding out is maybe we have to have jobs as well. Maybe, and but you don't have to have, you don't have to be the CEO of the company. You could let go. You can transcend pointless power struggles. You could overcome your own egoism. And you don't have to worry about failure. You're just doing it for the joie de vivre, for the love of the doing. And I think that that's so important. How many of us love our jobs? Maybe, right. And I would, I know this because I've known you a long time. Both of us love our jobs.
Yeah, right.
Right. We absolutely love our jobs.
Right.
And to be without those jobs would be a really...
No, they define us. I mean, that's a part that, I mean, you say my job myself and you think about it. I mean, you get how much of that is a detriment in the way that, you know, we talked about the work-life
right.
balance in May 1st. Just, you know, you are where you work and this idea that sometimes it's hard
right.
to pull
when you
away
lose
from
it
that.
The wrong way. I mean, the right. baseball player who gets cut and doesn't, you know, doesn't know what to do anymore because that's all he does is playing baseball since he's been in eighth grade. I understand all that. But I think that when we're talking about retirement now, we just can't think of doing nothing. First of all, it's never doing nothing. Retirement isn't full stop. Boom. You, as our texture suggested, I have other things to do that engage me, that intrigue me. And I think language, learning languages, traveling, one of the greatest gifts of life. And, of course, it's a very expensive hobby, isn't it? You know, but one of the greatest gifts of life is I learned about me by seeing the world. I learned more about me by seeing the world. The wonderful Chinese aphorism that one doesn't travel to see sights, one travels to find out about self.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a wonderful thing. But I think retirement isn't just being, I don't do anything anymore. Maybe I do something different. And I don't think you always have to be useful. I don't think you always, so that you can't, listen, I just want to paint, take long walks, and read books. Bravo, bravo. And you deserved it. You just put 45 years in the workplace. But why do we have to retire? Aren't there other things to do? Are there more things to do? But I don't think we should look at retirement as a penalty. And I don't think we should penalize people financially somewhere along the way. And I think one of our social problems in the future is going to be, if we're going to live longer, if we're talking about not within 20 years having an average age of 85 to 87, what do we do? The largest single group of aging is 90 and 100-year-olds. That's kind of scary. I mean, we're not talking about millions of people, but that's kind of scary. So I think we have to look at the finances as well. But we have to offer people options. We do that with children, don't we? We worry about that all the time, you know, Head Start programs, et cetera, et cetera. We need other kinds of programs that way. But retirement shouldn't be the end of life. Retirement should be a new phase in life, the second adulthood, perhaps the third adulthood, perhaps the fourth adulthood. You know, that wonderful film that with Leonardo DiCaprio, in which he was the airplane pilot. He's a real person.
Yeah.
You know, he now works for the FBI. I mean, when you think about that, right?
He just keeps changing up, catch
right.
up the can, right?
But what he loved in it, if you've read the text, what he loved in it is he changed who he was all the time, but still stayed who he was elementally. And I think that's an important consideration.
You know, Al, as I think about this, as we wrap up the conversation, you know, we have these conversations about work and we have these lofty thoughts and it's juxtaposed against what we see every single day in the news. If you're looking at Google or reading the newspapers, there will be another study in another way that we're
right.
ill-prepared, that the cost of living has gone up, that it's going to take million-plus dollars to live comfortably after retirement. You don't have enough money. You haven't invested in the right way. The stock market, all of the financial issues that get in the way of absorbing this conversation.
Right.
I mean, that's what it comes
that's
out
what
of.
Happens
you and I are talking. We're like, oh, that's great. This is great. You should be a painter.
But there are other things.
Many other things that are getting in the way.
Things. In fact, here's the perfect metaphor. It's I'm getting married. I want to get married, so I'm getting married, and all I'm worried about is a wedding rather than the real depth of my love for the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So retirement isn't just the function or the activity and the finances. It is also the mental set. And I will say the most unhappy people in the world that I've met in my lifetime were those who were in their mid-40s and they were downsized, right-sized, or fired from their jobs, who had a huge mortgage, two cars in the garage, and two kids in college, and not another skill set to fall back on.
Yeah.
That's the worst tragedy I've heard
right.
in my life.
Right.
But I think we do have to recognize that it's not just finances. It's, are you ready for this? Can you handle this? Who will you be without that title, without that place to go to every day? Those become critical issues. And maybe you don't have to have that title anymore. Maybe you can be something else somewhere else, and you have to work all that out.
Professor Al Genie is the professor of business at the Quinlan School of Business in Loyola University of Chicago. He's also a resident philosopher here on The Download, joins us regularly. We'll continue this conversation again later this summer. We'll continue the thoughtful look at the way we live our lives. Professor, great to see you.
Good to see you.
Great to talk to Al. conversation. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we got some music. Looking forward to it. Yonatan Gott, who is a great guitar player, Israeli-born guitar player, who was once called the best guitar player in New York, will join us. He's got a show coming in town tomorrow night. Also, Darius Brooks, the gospel singer, songwriter. I guess he's a songwriter. He's mostly, though, God's writing those songs. Let's be honest about that. Gospel singer Darius Brooks joins us coming up at the 9 o'clock hour. Well, as you heard earlier tonight, unity is the message down in Springfield. The governor spoke at the old Capitol building for 3.5 minutes to pretty much set the stage for a special session, one that hopefully by the end of this month we will see a balanced budget. We'll see what happens. The Republican senators have a plan to push through. They're hoping that they can get the Democrats to play ball. Joining us on the line, State Senator Jason Berrickman. He is the senator for the Bloomington area, and he joins us now. Senator, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about this. I mean, how different is this special session on the eve of the beginning of it than the special sessions we've had the last couple of years?
Well, we're in unprecedented territory. You know, the notion that the state has gone I think people are counting the days, 700 and some days over 2 years without a balanced budget. Our fiscal year ends June 30th, so there's this kind of built-in pressure to get something done as we approach the end of our fiscal year. And, you know, I think there's some reason to be optimistic. I mean, we don't want to oversell that, but I think you're seeing the two sides come together. You saw Republicans put forward a number of meaningful bills, legislation last week that are designed to put a marker in the sand that reflects some priorities of both Republicans and Democrats. We urged the governor last week to put us back in Springfield to get something done, and he's done that by calling us back. So we're going to spend the next 10 days, hopefully, doing something that has, you know, really been challenging, right? Mm-hmm. Bringing the two sides together to get something done, including a balanced budget in our state.
Well, I mean, I was reading today the Associated Press piece, just the concept that there are, you know, it's unprecedented, like you said, but there are a lot of other states that have rules and regulations that come along with unbalanced budgets or not getting a budget done, whether it be government shutdowns or penalties and things of that nature. I mean, it's amazing, I think, to taxpayers and to people, not just in the Chicago area, but the whole state, that the lawmakers in Springfield have been able to drag this out for 700 plus days with no penalties. I mean, the deadlines just kind of come and go. What gives us confidence that you guys are just going to blow through another deadline at the end of this month?
Yeah, I mean, the skepticism, if not the cynicism that exists in the public is not lost on many of us, certainly isn't lost on me, and for good reason, right? I mean, this is, we live in an era where people are disappointed by government, and then it seems like Illinois seems to double down on that approach. So, what my hope is here is that some cooler heads, reasonable minds prevail, and that we do something that we haven't done. To your point, even though the state hasn't had a budget for this long, I think it's affected people in different ways. The totality of it, you know, the notion that we could go through the summer here without a budget and that schools may be in a position where they can't open. Some schools are talking about delaying openings or only being open certain days. I mean, these are totally unacceptable principles in the eyes of the public. I'll say even, you know, there's lots of people out there who don't vote and they hear about dysfunction like this and it kind of reinforces their mentality of, I live in a dysfunctional state with a dysfunctional government. They kind of throw their arms up in the air and say, there's nothing we can do about it. Our job is to rise above through that and actually do something that portrays a positive message to the public that we get it, that we understand we're there to get a job done, and that people have expectations of us to do exactly that and get that job done.
You know, Senator, as we think about one of the big issues that are at play, and that's school funding and reforming the formula for state funding across the board, you know, you've been a big proponent and champion of trying to get school funding changed in the way it does in the state of Illinois. You know, today at the City Club, Bill Daley was there. There were others that were talking about this sort of the way that Chicago has been represented in this political fight, where terms like bailout and others come up when talking about Chicago public schools. Explain, you know, as someone who's a senator to an area that's outside of the Chicago area, you're downstate, just outside of Champaign and Peoria. Just tell me a little bit about the idea of what is inequitable and what's unfair about Chicago, what Chicago's asking for when it comes to school funding and school reform.
Yeah, you know, the area, the city of Chicago becomes kind of one of those hot topic political issues that can fire up a base, whether it be people in the city who, you know, care tremendously about it, all the way to, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, you have people in this state who blame all of the state's ills and problems on the city. And, you know, that's kind of the crowd that says, hey, if you were to carve out Chicago and make it a 51st state, or maybe 52nd if Puerto Rico's 51,
right.
But it's that crowd who says, you know, we can solve all our problems if we just get rid of Chicago. Somewhere throughout all the political rhetoric is some common and reasonable sense that recognizes that we have a great asset in the city of Chicago. It is a wonderful component of our very large and diverse state. And when we talk about fixing a school funding formula, we do so in the context and in the reality that Chicago has some very tremendous financial pressures. They've had years of, quite frankly, mismanagement, and they've created a lot of problems. The state has done its part as well to aggravate that situation in Chicago. You've got pockets of very high concentrations of poverty within the city of Chicago, and a lot of political pressure and a lot of political support coming out of the city. And so because of that, there's a lot of attention on Chicago. What myself and others, you know, I'm a downstate Republican, and so, you know, there's this notion that maybe we just dismiss the importance of the city, and that's just not the case. What I've encouraged us to do, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, is to simply recognize where Chicago is, the importance of the city, the fact that they are part of us, our great state. We need to help them out. And as we do that, we need to make sure that we're helping them out in a fair and equitable way as compared specifically to the, you know, we probably have two or three hundred other school districts around the state. None of them with the population of Chicago, but many of them even poorer than Chicago. And so I don't want to pit one region against the other. I want a fair formula that helps all our kids, whether they be some of our downstate schools, but also including Chicago.
Well, I mean, another area that, you know, has sort of been played out in the preview of the special session is just about the political stakes when we talk about whether or not a budget gets passed or not. And, you know, at that City Club, they were talking about, I think it was Daley again, who said if Governor Rauner can't get a balanced budget this year, he's not going to win re-election. And you've heard others say that, you know, you're getting to a certain point where this is less about balancing a budget and more about the political ramifications of elections. What do you say to taxpayers who don't understand the idea that balancing a budget has become a political ploy?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that here we are. You know, we're in the summer of a year which we don't have an election cycle, yet we all know there's an election around the corner. It just happens to be more than a year away, but you're already seeing some of the advertising on that. We live in a political world, you know, and it's the unfortunate reality that money and social media and all these things create this political atmosphere, which makes it very difficult to get things done, especially when you're talking, you know, some of the new media, the social media pressure really allows some of those on the far right and the far left to gin up the base, make it difficult to work in the middle and get things done. But I just don't think people care about the politics of it. You know, when we've got 3 young kids at home, And so, you know, me, like many others, have a certain expectation that the government's going to work,
right,
that schools are going to be open, and that we elect people without the need to babysit them to get the job done, right? That we elect them thinking, hey, I'm electing a good person, Republican, Democrat, what have you, who is going to represent me in getting a job done. And that's where I think we've all failed in being able to do that. Now, to tie it into the governor, you know, he's taken a lot of heat, admittedly, as a result of this dysfunction. But it's important to note that here we are, you know, at this stage of the game, and there's not been, you know, because of the disagreement between Madigan and Cullerton, the two Democratic leaders have not come to an agreement among themselves on a budget to send the governor. Cullerton's got his version. Madigan kind of froze. It's like he's paralyzed in this political process where he didn't adopt the Cullerton budget, which we criticized as being unbalanced, but he also didn't work with us on a compromise budget.
Right.
So I think Madigan, you know, like him or not, he has an opportunity to play a very significant role here. Republicans kind of demonize him, but we need his, you know, we need him to demonstrate some leadership in the Illinois House. I hope that leadership is of the cloth that encourages a compromise and a bipartisan solution here, because I think if we get the speaker engaged, and I think if he exerts some of that significant pressure that he has, that we can find a path to work together and actually get something done.
State Senator Jason Berkman is the Republican senator from the Bloomington area, and he will be down in Springfield. He's in Springfield now for the special session, which begins tomorrow, 10 days to get a balanced budget in place for the state of Illinois. Senator, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. Grammy Award winner coming up here. Darius Brooks is going to join us, talk about gospel, talk about Make Music Chicago, which is part of Make Music Day. And it usually falls on the solstice around the beginning of summer, June 21st. So tomorrow, from sunrise to after sunset, there will be shows all over Chicago. It's a cool idea, right?
Are they going to be right outside our window tomorrow?
Where they last? I feel like maybe they, yeah, probably.
All right.
They had a list of places they're going to be. You know, it's on the makemusicchicago.org. But hilariously, I'm going to go around to every street performer tomorrow and just be like, can I see your permit? Because are you part of Make Music? You're not. No, this is unsanctioned for Make Music Day. But we'll talk with Darius Brooks coming up. Also, Yonatan Gott. I'm excited to talk with him, guitar player. Israeli. He's part of the Israeli music series. The Israeli consulate here is bringing a couple of Israeli acts to Chicago. It's kind of a cool idea. One at Consolation, one at Shubas. They're bringing an indie rock band to Shubas. And then they're bringing Yonatan to Consolation in, I guess that's Roscoe Village, 3111 Northwestern.
I remember seeing his former band or whatever, his band, the band that he's in, Monotonics, I think that's how you pronounce it. They were at the Hideout Block Party a number of years ago. And I didn't really know much about them, but I heard people kind of saying, like, oh, you're going to be amazed when you see these guys.
Like a garage rock band. A garage rock band, yeah.
And it was incredible. They were amazing. I want to say the drummer performed on people. Like, people, like, lifted up the drum set. Like, he was stage-dived with the drum set. So there was, like, a sea of people holding up the drummer as he was
drumming
on the drums. Incredible.
Well, Yonatan is known as what an amazing distinction. But Village Voice called him the best guitarist in New York City, 2013.
You know, people at Guitar Center were looking at that like,
yeah,
sure.
Right. He probably stuffed a ballot box like they do on the Chicago Reader Best Of. You know, like when I would tell you, way back the Tribune did like a Best of Chicago, and they had there was early on in technology where you could do polls, right? And there really wasn't a way to limit it. you know, like, because the Trib hadn't thought about that. And so Schadenfreude at that time, which was my comedy group, I think it was 98, 97, they did this. We had a good following and told everybody at the shows, like, yo, go to the websites. No, the other people, they're not going to know how to work websites.
Yeah.
It's 1998. And we were able to win.
Rigged the system.
I rigged the system. We just were ferocious in the way that we did it. We mm-hmm. didn't rig anything. We just were like...
Yeah, I guess you didn't rig anything.
Yeah, we didn't rig anything. Yeah. We're just like,
just
hey,
played the game properly.
We played the game properly and we organized around it. Because mm-hmm. most of the time, you know, it's not like random people are going to Best of Chicago and the Reader or Tribune going,
right.
Oh, you know, I do like that cocktail. No, it's people who said, hey, please vote for me, things like that. And so we won. But then the Tribune, I remember Achi Obejas, a friend of mine now, at the time she was a writer, she's like a spunky little improv group that stuffed the ballot box wins. But we like the Neo-Futurists or whatever it was. And I remember I was like, what? You can't say that. You can't say that when someone else. What do you mean? Like, the second place people stuffed it, too. Like, I got mad about it. Anyway, it has nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight, but I remember.
And you, but you, did you all, did you use that, like, as a
fuel?
Or just, like, you know, like, whenever you're promoting a show, like, saying, voted best of Reader.
You know, I feel like we did at the top of that, like the concept, like, oh yeah, that was a big thing. It was for the Tribune, so it was like, oh, best of. And then, like, maybe after 3 months, we're like, it didn't do anything. We're like, who cares? Like, we stopped, because I know that when we have our publicity packet now, it doesn't even make, it's not even, it's like a glint. We don't even remember it.
Yeah,
but we were voted twice best of Chicago in the Reader without stuffing the ballot box. So there you go.
It's always weird too when you see the ones like voted best mechanic, Time Off Chicago, 2003. I'm like, yeah, okay, what have you done for the last 12 years?
Right,
or
right.
14 years? What right. about now?
What about now? Well, that's, I get a lot of that. We have theater people on. They were a Chicagoan of the year, 1988. Well, they're on tonight. But we'll talk with both of us. And then coming up, we didn't even talk about this. It's Tuesday night. It's time for The Worst. Claire Zuhlke and Erica Reed are going to be here.
Great.
They're doing Funny Haha on Friday night. 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? Chalk. Like, across like, the board. I think it's time we find there's no like redeemable reason for
on
chalk.
The ground?
Anything. On
school.
A chalkboard, any of that stuff. It is a rudimentary, primitive way. I mean, the concept being that you can erase it. That's essentially where that's chalk.
Mm-hmm.
We've moved on technology-wise to go way beyond that. We can do dry erase, markers, anything can erase. So the idea of any like school still doing chalk or chalk being sold for fun, like, mm-hmm, you can write mm-hmm. on the sidewalk, all right. There's a lot of other great ways to do that than that. So I say the worst, chalk. Right? So yeah, so. All right, coming up, it'll be interesting because I'm looking forward to having the conversation. I don't know a ton, I will say this, about avant-garde guitar and listening to the work today, which is really interesting. What Yonatan does that is, like, his claim to fame is he's able to take multi-genres, meaning he can set a, you know, a landscape and then start playing country in the middle of it, or jazz, or blues, or hip-hop, whatever it is. But he does it with his guitar, and he's able to... And most of it, I just use generic American genres. We're talking about African beats,
everything.
A lot of South American yeah. stuff. So, I mean, we'll talk with him about how you do that, you know, as you sort of develop a sound for that kind of stuff. So, and we'll do that coming up here.
So. Great.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll see if we can get Yonatan in studio. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this month, the Israeli Music Series is presenting two different concerts in town. Tomorrow, Israeli-born guitarist Yonatan Gott will be playing at Constellation at 3111 Northwestern Avenue in Roscoe Village. Gott is a guitarist, producer, composer, who was chosen as the best guitarist in New York City by the Village Voice back in 2013. He's been profiled in the New York Times, among other places. He's considered an avant-garde musician who uses improvisation to incorporate multiple genres. He's considered one of the best guitar players in the world. He's also formerly part of the band Monotonics, the rock band from Tel Aviv, which played the Hideout Block Party not too long ago here in Chicago. And he's with us tonight. Yonatan, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I know you guys are on the road. You just came in, which is awesome.
Just got here, literally.
So let's talk about, that was a big show at the Hideout Block Party. Talk about Chicago. What's it mean to you to be back in town after that performance?
Interesting. Yeah, we're in a different part of town than where I usually play shows, you know. I've never played The Loop, but I've been to an amazing show here in September. There was a World Music Festival, and there was an all-night raga performance. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. You know, some people were sitting, listening to the music. It was all Indian classical music. Some people were sitting, listening to the music. Other people were just, you know, sleeping in the corner of the room and sleeping back, because it was a 24-hour raga concert. Right. One of the most amazing things I've seen, because I feel like so many musicians, what we try to produce in our concerts is an environment that's free. You know, we can feel how our society is getting more and more rigid every day, you know, especially in the current political climate. And it was really wonderful to see a concert right here in downtown Chicago kind of achieve all that just by presenting itself as this 24-hour raga performance. You know, there were all kinds of people there, old, young. Some of them were sleeping, some of them were awake. Talk about versatility.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, that's a great
When you put
experience.
A show on, whether it's, you know, what you're doing now with the trio or what you're doing with former bands, how important is the space? How important is creating an environment for the music to live?
Well, that's what we do, you know. When we play our concerts, we play in the middle of the audience. That's what I've always done. I've done that with Monotonics, and I do it with the current band. For each band, it's a bit different. Monotonics was a bit more performance art, you know, in a way. We would set up in the audience because that was the main place for us to kind of do our thing, you know, get close to the audience, get in people's faces. That's a bit less of what I'm interested in doing now.
Yeah.
What we do now, the concert incorporates a lot of improvisation. So by being there on the floor with the audience, whether it's a huge festival, then we set up a little stage, but we're still on the floor. We never played behind barricades. We never stand more than, you know, a few feet from the audience. And they're right there with us. Basically a part of the show, they stand between us sometimes when the room is too crowded. We create an environment where the concert is a shared experience. It's not really, I am presenting to you.
Do you have a hard time convincing audiences to play along in that way? And if they're standing in between you or around you and you're on the stage and it's all part of, or the stage is all part of the space that the audience is in, do they play the right role, or are they confused or saying, I'll drink a beer on this bass amp?
in some ways, yeah, of course, like accidents could happen, right? That's what we've became good at, you know, gaffer taping everything and things like that. When you play those kinds of performances, become a real maestro with the gaffer tape. But other than that, shows are different situations, different scenarios, different rooms, different atmospheres, you know, and they start differently, but they actually end kind of similarly. Not that I'm saying that every show is similar. There's a lot of nuance. But people kind of get it once the music starts, you know, no matter where it is, if it's in Europe or South America or here or big cities, small cities. Yeah. It's kind of like when the music starts, I think
they get it.
The show explains itself.
You know, you use improvisation with the trio, and Sergio's here as well. But talk about one of the things I even mentioned in the lead, just this concept that you're able to take a lot of different genres and mix them together, even as the song is going. I mean, you're able to bring in different music from different cultures and be able to play them proficiently. Talk about where that comes from, because a lot of artists and musicians and guitarists, they know one form, or they may know a couple, but I mean, it seems like you tend to learn them all.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I always feel like the discussion about culture is a bit sticky, so you have to be a bit careful talking about it irresponsibly. And that's kind of the way I approach the music too. I think a lot of kind of fusion projects suffer from, and I don't see myself as a fusion project at all. I mean, I really like the beginning of fusion with Miles Davis, you know, Electric Records and things like that. But I think fusion projects suffer from being a little bit too much of a conceptual project sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, let's say I'm an American, I'm a rocker, I like Brazilian samba music, so I'm just going to make a decision and combine both. To me, there's something a bit irresponsible about that. And I think the music that would be produced in such an environment would not probably not have what I'm looking for, mm-hmm. because I think music is something a bit more organic than that. So I think what you should, what I do at least when I try to incorporate different styles, and it's not really a try, it's not really like a conscience decision, you know. It's about, I've been making music for over a decade now, traveling all over the world, performing, touring all the time, you know. I went to see flamenco shows in Spain, I went to see, you know, tango shows in Buenos Aires, and all this music kind of like seeps in. And the way that I use it is that I'm not going to start a tango band tomorrow, though that sounds like so much fun. I just know that it's not going to have what I'm looking for.
Right.
I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing and take something maybe from the approach of tango that I learned if I kind of explore that music deeply. I'm not going to run tomorrow and like add a bandeon and piano and, you know, tango singer to my band, because I feel like that would be a bit irresponsible, even disrespectful of another musical style that has so many nuances that I can't possibly understand, not unless I'm either from that region or I explore that music very, very profoundly.
Sergio, I mean, as a bass player, you know, playing in the trio, do you have to have an unwritten sort of communication or an unvocal an unsaid communication with Yonatan when it comes to trying to navigate the music that's being produced?
I think that's part of the job. It's a lot of being able to move from moment to moment without, you know, stopping the flow and making big gestures. And, you know, it takes patience and anxiety in, you know, equal doses to arrive together to those places.
So the idea is to let those different styles, to let, you know, the way that you live your life, your experiences, seep into your music slowly, you know. It's never like a sexy thing to say, you know, be slow and responsible about it. But it's true, you know. You can't just, like, go around, like, you know, appropriating something because it's cool. I think everybody has a right to perform every music they want. Right. But I think the way to make it really deep and meaningful is you have to have a personal experience with that music. Something beyond, I like that kind of music.
Do you have to stop yourself in cases when you're at the flamenco show or you're at a tango show where you're like, that would be great, and then you have that sort of understanding?
No, I would never think about doing directly what they do. You know, I don't have that. I mean, I think I don't really have that instinct to see something and try to do the same thing. I sit in a show of a style of music that I've never seen before, or at least never experienced in that amazing, you know, direct way of seeing a concert, the first thing that I think about is, how does it relate to me, you know, to my life, to my experience? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most interesting way to kind of like incorporate many, many styles, to just like incorporate your own experience of them and not the rules and the aesthetics that they present, because that takes years of research. So I think there's like little touches and little flavors of many, many, many styles, and it's endless in our music. It's not really about including them in some sort of like decision. It's just like the more we live, the more we experience, the more all those things seep into our music.
A lot of American audiences are, I guess, trained by the music that's produced that there's a certain framework that the song is going to sound like. When I listen to your stuff, I'm getting more of a vibe of its landscape, or you're moving towards something, but it's not the sort of four chord structure where, you know, here comes the hook, here comes the chorus, we're back to the second part, where's the solo, all that kind of stuff. I mean, you're messing around with the structure of music. Is it hard to and hard's not the right word, is it a challenge to get the audiences to buy into the idea that there isn't going to be this framework that they're used to?
It's a bit more challenging on records, I think, because it's kind of like an audio-only experience, you know. You got the artwork and you got the, you know, the person that you're selling to, kind of like that made the record. But mostly it's the audio. So in the record, we actually use a lot of studio tricks. I can't really talk about the new record so much. It's coming out in January, but like nobody's ever heard anything out of it. So it would be a bit silly to sit here and talk about it. But in the new record, for example, we used different studio trickery that we didn't use in the last ones, like incorporating vocals and field recordings from, you know, very distant times, like things taken by Alan Lomax in Italy or Spain in the 1950s or something like that. And we put them in our music and we sample them and we chop them in like really kind of, you know, tools that are being used for music right now.
Mm-hmm.
And to give the music something that is beyond structure, you know. So in the studio, there's like a whole set of tricks that you would use for that. And I always find that challenging because you only like get to people's ears. In the show, there's just like something that always happened when I was performing, whether it was in Monotonics or what I'm working on right now. It just explains itself.
Yeah. Yonatan Gott is playing with his trio at the Constellation, 3111 Northwestern Avenue, as part of the Israeli Music Series. There's going to be another concert coming up here the end of the month at Shubas with a different group. All right. I want to thank you so much for coming in. I know that you came right off the road and right into the studio.
No problem.
Good luck with the show. I'm a fan of your music, and thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tomorrow is the summer solstice, and you can celebrate, of course, by dancing to sunset or dancing to free live music all over town. That's right. Tomorrow's the annual Make Music Day, launched in France back in 1982. The idea is to have musicians come together and give back to their respective communities, a renewal, if you will. It's the seventh year that Chicago has participated. There are concerts all over town tomorrow, starting at the beach at sunrise and going all throughout the day. You can get all the info at makemusicchicago.org. One of the concerts tomorrow will, in fact, be 11 different concerts, and that's just here in the city. At 11:30, quartets from all over the country are going to play Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings and George Walker's Lyric for Strings. It's part of a show called Lift Every Voice, Musicians Rising for Racial Justice. And then at 5 o'clock in Millennium Park, 5 p.m., the quartets all come together for Lift Every Voice and Sing, which will be performed by my next guest, Grammy Award-winning gospel singer Darius Brooks. Brooks is a mainstay in the gospel scene here in Chicago. He's been nominated for so many awards. He got his start in the Chicago church, where at the age of 18, joined the Thompson Community Singers, also known as the Tommies, and he stayed with them for over a decade. And, of course, he has so many great credits to his name. Darius Brooks, my guest tonight. Good to see you, Mr. Brooks. Thanks for being here.
Justin, I'm honored to be here with you. What? You are the man.
Oh, no.
So good to see you.
Let's talk about this. I mean, this is a huge undertaking. I mean, the idea of putting Lift Every Voice, Musicians Rising for Racial Justice together. Talk about how you got involved.
Well, Patty called me, who's an incredible musician for this organization, said, Darius, man, it would be awesome if you just do it. First, actually, it's for the church. And I said, I'd be honored. And then when she thought about it, she says, will you do the main event? I said, of course. And when she asked me to do Lift Every Voice and Sing, I'm like, wow, this is huge. Balance of life is key, Justin. Too much of anything ain't good for you.
Right.
And when you're talking about bringing people together, you're talking about something huge that's absolutely amazing and incredible. So those kind of people I love getting involved with because it's a bigger picture. So when they said, then the orchestras and the groups all over the country, I'm like, what? I'm in. I am in. Count me in.
Well, it's funny because music and the church, and I think about, has always been at the epicenter of social justice movements, and gospel included. So what's it mean to be a part of a show that's called Musicians Rising for Racial Justice? What's it mean for you as a singer, as a member of a citizen of the city of Chicago?
It's a great conduit and resource to bring things back together. At the end of the day, all hearts to me are red and they bleed. Anybody who don't understand that, just have different perspectives. But to me, the soul, that the spiritual or the church dynamic or relationship that people get into kind of sort of give us a navigation of what this thing is all about. So it to me, it goes hand in hand when you really have a passion for something to make something better. It includes you, someone else, towards an objective, not necessarily that I'm right or wrong. So when I heard about it and when they asked me to do it, I'm like, this is it. I'm on it. I talked to my wife about it, and she says, Darius, you got to do this, because this is what I do. I love bridging the gap.
For you, I mean, let's talk gospel music, your career. You know, I kind of mentioned the lead that, you know, you started as a youngster. Even, I mean, you joined the Tommies at the age of 18. You lived a life before the age of 18 in music.
Yeah, well, my mother, I don't know if you ever heard of Mahalia Jackson, but my mother played for Mahalia Jackson.
Amazing.
I was in Mahalia Jackson's face and didn't even know who she was. It's crazy. Of course, I've been with Reverend Jesse Jackson. I've been his minister of music for Rainbow Push for a number of years, 26, 27. I can't even name it. And some of the people he's introduced me to, from James Brown to Lou Rawls, the same. When I look at this kind of dynamic of great music, it comes from the soul, Justin. Oh, my goodness. And if you ever want to read, they say music soothes the savage beast. So when I was 18 and I came up in church, come through the Thompson Community Singers, it's called Now Coming Together, how music is the connector.
Did you find yourself as a kid, I mean, as a becoming a man at the age of 18, having to make a choice to get into the Tommies? I mean, to say this is what I'm going to do as opposed to I'm going to go do something else, I'm going to get out of music, I'm just going to live my life. What drew you to the Tommies? What kept you in gospel music?
Passion. Your passion, what you really love, is what drives you. Your job doesn't wake you up in the morning. Your passion does. Oh, my goodness. Unfortunately, it's a true principle, whether it's negative or positive, whatever your passion is, it drives you. And whenever I would hear gospel music, I play, I sing, I write, I produce, I teach, I train. Mm-hmm. So my passion was there. I'd find myself running to rehearsal, just singing, Jesus is a rock. Jesus is a rock. Jesus is a rock. I mean, Justin is crazy. But your passion... That's what drew me. And since day one, my passion for music, and my mother always taught me, Ethel Brooks, she was a great pianist. She taught me when you have a passion and you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. We chase money. Mm-hmm. Do what you want at the end of the day. But if you ever find your passion, you'll live your best life.
Why is it that, I mean, there's so many great stories of some of the great musicians of our time that started in the church. They started in the church choir, they started in the church band. Talk about the relationship, not just with gospel, but for a lot of different musicians. Mm-hmm. But what is it about the church that makes great musicians?
Justin, you ever heard Amazing Grace?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You ever heard of the song Precious Lord, Take My Hand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Music is heard with the ear, but it's understood with the heart. And the reason everybody come through church to do it, I would have to bet you, if I was a betting man, that 60, 70, 80% of the people, watch this, even from rock to Beethoven, they come through a spiritual metamorphosis that takes them to a musical avenue. So church is the place from Whitney Houston to Aretha Franklin. What? What? Luther? What? Lou Rawls? Listen, James Brown?
Right,
what?
Right, right.
Some of the, when Michael Jackson said James Brown was his mentor, listen, all of them came out of church.
Mm-hmm.
Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand. I am tired. I can't, because I go, I am weak, I am worn through the storm. Now, you transfer that into a real relationship, like, baby, I love you. It just starts transforming from R&B.
It's in the same place.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Different language, different ambience. It goes from God understanding that feel to, baby, I love you.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, you think about the soul that goes into gospel music. As you just referenced, I mean, this concept of finding that place, finding that spirituality, it may not necessarily be as overt and literal in the sense that you're praising God or praising Jesus, but the idea of finding that spiritual place, that is what you're seeing in so many musicians who continue to prosper in any sort of form.
Absolutely. Justin, you are absolutely right. And I wish that a lot of people could have taught a little differently in the church, because it's not necessarily a Jesus freak or a God illusionist, but more of a spiritual journey. It really is. Feelings and emotions are different from spirit. Spirit says, what is it that I really want? Feelings and emotions let you capitalize off what you do. You are absolutely right. It's a spiritual journey, something that's bigger than us. As a matter of fact, I really study the Word of God, not religiously, but their principles. And he says, and their works shall follow them, which means when you tap into your spiritual mm-hmm. person, your spiritual journey, everything you do, watch this, you leave for somebody else to say, wow. And they capitalize and gain from what you spiritually connected for the earth and for people. And I love it. I always say, if you think education is expensive, you should try ignorance. So, Justin, you are absolutely right when it comes to spirituality. And wonderfully, a lot of people have it. Some don't. But that's the key. Because when it's spiritual, it's always a bigger picture. It's almost like you see what you don't see. You don't just sing because you like to sing. But your singing is so powerful that it touches, transforms, and changes other people's lives.
We're talking with Grammy Award-winning gospel singer Darius Brooks. He is going to be a part of the Make Music Day. I'll give all that information at the end here, which is tomorrow. I'm fascinated where gospel music is going, because Chicago has such a strong connection, and you keep it going, which is great. And I mean, we have the Gospel Fest here, we have other things, but gospel music is truly a Chicago experience. You're a perfect example of someone who observes it on a daily basis. Where is gospel music heading? Because more and more we see it to be almost, and I mean no offense to this, but museum-type music, where, you know, you talked about Mahalia Jackson and others in the form. Talk about where we are currently and if a younger generation is skipping the church.
Justin, you are on point. Man, we got to come back and do this again. This is awesome. I'm so serious. The millennials,
you're always welcome.
It's so true. The millennials are really, if we don't teach them, they're going to miss it. But when you said the Gospel of Chicago is the mecca of gospel music, you know who've come through here? Thomas Dorsey, mm-hmm. Precious Lord, take my hand. Mahalia Jackson, Sally Martin, James Cleveland. If you go to any of the big names in gospel, they came out of Chicago. Chicago is the maker. Even Milton Bronson, the Times Community Singers, they came out of Chicago. Not being biased, but I am. I'm so glad to be from Chicago.
You kind of have to be, yeah, right?
I mean, this place is amazing. Justin, here at WGN, listen, I mean, this kind of information right here, everybody don't get this. Justin had to connect Darius Brooks. What? I know this guy. And I'm like, Justin is the real deal. Justin really know what's up. So that connection is huge. And you're absolutely right, Chicago is a beast when it comes to great music, entrepreneurs, people who have started in this field. And then it goes off into the other things. I believe gospel music will never go anywhere.
But, you know, you see with the millennial generation, and I don't want to – I hate to stereotype generations because it's like a pet peeve of mine because everyone's different. But you do see a change in the way that maybe the idea of spending time in the church and learning the church band or learning an instrument or being in the choir is something that can be bypassed if you're a musician and move on or not spend the time on Sundays or spend the time rehearsing in a choir. This idea that maybe the church's impact or influence on musicians is dwindling. Do you see that? Do you see younger kids not coming through and are participating like other generations have?
To a certain degree, yes. But Justin, you're not stereotyping. Observing and stereotyping are parallel. You have to differentiate those very well. Yeah. The stereotyping is saying what something is. Observing says what something appears to be. So you're not stereotyping. And yes, what you're saying is absolutely true, because the millennials these days, and I agree with them, the other ways are not working, and you can't trick me with this stuff.
Right.
So they're going to come up with new ideas to do what they need to do wonderfully. I've learned this.
Do they lose that center of passion, though? That's, I mean, as I think about you, or I think about artists that you've mentioned in this conversation, they went through the church, they learned the choir, they learned the band, but they learned how to articulate their passion and bring it to the next level if they're a musician. Do they miss that by missing the church?
No, and I'll tell you why. God is not the church. Jesus is not the church. I know that's what we've been taught. But God is his word, and you said it best. You are amazing. You said, no, so true. I'm telling you the truth. Your spiritual walk is where God is. It's not church. It's not Genesis to Revelation. Those are his words. But each one of us individually has to tap into our own individual self. And wonderfully, it doesn't matter what you do in life. There's a spiritual aspect that will catch up with you. As a matter of fact, get old. 50, 60, 70, you're going to get to a place that says, wow, what happened? And God says, well, I guess this is it. You got it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that spiritual connection is what keeps us close to God. So these new millennials, I ain't talking about God, no religious person.
Right, they don't need to go in the church.
Right, but the spiritual aspect of how God orchestrates events to move all of us in his will, they won't bypass that because it ain't going to happen.
Well, are they going to bypass if they're artistic kids, and I think of a new generation, even younger than Chance the Rapper and others who are bringing that into the spotlight, by missing that experience, that extracurricular experience of being in a choir, being in a band, do they miss out that something that may stick with them and define who they are as musicians moving forward?
I don't think they'll miss out, because I'm going to be honest with you. Justin, as you and I sitting here talking, a different culture. I came from a different world, but look at what's happening in this room right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. So to answer your question, I don't believe they're going to miss out, because I have a belief that God has a way of orchestrating things to turn out the way they're supposed to be. Now, if they don't seek it and look for it, they can get their wrong answers from wrong different things, because there's a lot of crazy information out here. But spiritually, if you stay in tune, there's some crazy things or will appear to be crazy that will be orchestrated where you say, I want to do this, and not necessarily putting a name on it, but it is. Because I don't care what nobody say, God is an infinite. He's not people. He's not things. He's the world. He's the earth. He's all of us. And whoever tap into it will bring this thing to light. What kind of person would do music and think justice will be done? Well, watch. Mm-hmm. Because that's a creative way to say, hey, let's do this. Black and white, what? And then music, what? Watch. It's going to blow things out the water. And that's what I love about you, Patty, and people who could see. Eyesight with no insight is twilight.
Ah, that's good. All right, you got to come back. We got to wrap up, but you got to come back. We'll do more. We'll get some music up in here. Grammy Award-winning gospel singer Darius Brooks will be part of the Lift Every Voice Musicians Rising for Racial Justice concerts tomorrow, both at 11:30. 11:30 you'll be doing in your church in Westchester.
Yes, Grace Central Church, 10216 South Kitchener Street, Westchester, Illinois, 11:30.
And then at 5 o'clock in Millennium Park, all of the musicians will come together from around the city, and Darius will be singing Lift Every Voice and Sing. Great to have you here to celebrate Make Music Chicago, which is the event tomorrow. Darius, great to meet you, and looking forward to having you back.
I'm so honored. Thank you, Justin.
You made a way. You've opened doors I could not see. Yes, you have. You made me do right when I would do wrong. You made my enemies leave me alone. I've accepted you, so you're mine. Now you're with me all the time. Lord, I love you. Yes, I do.
Coming up, we're playing the worst, 312-981-7200. 630 says, you know, it's the worst. Pete's laugh. Not fair. It's not fair, and disagree entirely. Pete's got the best laugh in the business. There are a lot of laughs that I would put in that category. But 630, you're just hating. No need to hate. Right? There's something, I mean, think about the laughs that we know in Chicago radio. Few and far between. Not a lot of laughers. Pete brings a very unique laugh to the radio.
I will join the annals of a Buzz Killman, a Robin Baumgarten.
Maybe a Gene Sparrow.
And a Gene Sparrow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get a hold of Gene. Because I'd reached out to her and I was going back and forth about getting her to be on the big table.
Yeah, she'd be great.
She'd be great. I mean, you know, she was the longtime host of You and Me in the Morning on CIU, but before that had such a great career in radio. She had been in Chicago for years. I remember I used to listen to her and Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey left and came back, but at the beginning of his career, he was doing radio out of Chicago at WGCI, and he and Gene Sparrow were doing a show. So anyway, 630 says, nah, Pete's the best. Puts Ed McMahon to shame. So there you go. You know. All right, coming up. Interesting tonight because there has been two different reports. Sports alert. That Jimmy Butler. We had talked about Jimmy Butler, the star of the Chicago Bulls, being on the trading block as the NBA draft is around the corner, and there was interest from the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. So there are two reports out tonight. One. That the Boston Celtics denied the trade that the Bulls wanted to make. They wanted the overall three and other things and whatever the actual deal was. Now, this is just a rumored report that the Boston Celtics said no deal. We don't want Jimmy Butler that bad. And now there's another report out that says Jimmy Butler told the Cleveland Cavaliers he was not interested in playing in Cleveland.
Right.
So... at the beginning of the day, they're like, there's Boston, there's Cleveland, that's going to be big. And at the end of the day, you're like, we're not. You know, we're not. It's an interesting sort of change of events here. And I don't know if that means there's other teams that might be interested or, you know, if come Friday, Jimmy Butler is still on the Chicago Bulls. I mean, I'm okay with that. You heard me last week, and Sam will be on later in the week. But I love the idea of the rent-a-Bulls. I love the idea of every – past all-star coming to town, opening a Kia dealership, you know, being like a star for a year in Chicago, like Blake Griffin, you know, out of LA, or Zach Randolph in Memphis. Come up here, and maybe we can't get you the Madison Avenue sponsorships. We get you the Madison Street stuff. There's a Paisanos, you know.
As my good friend Frank Sinatra says, one guy.
There's the Marianos right off of Madison.
Apple Chevy.
I mean, there's plenty. Man. There's
Step
opportunities.
Into a Tahoe.
That's right. There are opportunities for past All-Stars. Can't be current All-Stars. Have to be past All-Stars. I saw that Dirk Nowitzki is a free agent as well. Bring them all here. Bring all of the 38-year-old NBA past All-Stars to Chicago to play in the Bills.
Give us guys whose knees are about ready to blow out.
Yeah.
We'll take them.
Big knee pads, unkempt, like, froze. Like, they no longer are doing, like, the 24-year-old cool shot. Now it's just kind of, like, getting loose. Not as great of a haircut. Velour suits like Dwayne Wade was wearing at the NBA Finals.
Why don't we just, glasses, like, get rid of the Bulls and get, like, the Harlem Globetrotters?
That was what I was explaining, the Globetrotters. They stop, they pretend like they've got a basketball in their hand, and then they got a pail of water, and it's not water, it's confetti. There's a lot we could do. I mean, just to be inspired. They could say inspired by the Harlem Globetrotters.
Mm-hmm. Nothing like the Zerbert on the official's tummy, you know? He lifts up the biggest shirt, and you know.
Chance can do a new version of Sweet Georgia Brown.
There's a lot of options. What we're saying, Jimmy Butler, is there's a lot of options. Don't leave. We're making a great Chicago Bulls team for you. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Have you seen the movie, what was the movie, Semi-Pro with Will Ferrell? Do you remember that movie? Rob, you ever seen that one?
Wasn't he like a member of the Florida something or others?
He owned like an ABA team. Uh-huh. It was like the 70s or something. And it was not a very good movie. But really great basketball jokes in there. Like this great Will Ferrell 80s basketball jokes in there. It's worth a relook. It's definitely not on the worst list. It's on the medium list.
I'll Netflix it tonight.
Yeah, there you go. C+. That's what Kaufman says. C+.
It's going down, y'all.
All right, thanks, Rob. It's time for the worst here in the downloads. 312-981-7200. We've got some stuff already coming in tonight. Awesome. 312-981-7200. We have from Funny Haha, which will be on stage at the Hideout this Friday, creator Claire Zolke. Hey, Claire,
hey,
how
Justin,
are you?
How are you? I'm great. Thank you.
All right. And also one of the performers, Erica Reed.
What up?
It's a prime time. You guys are veterans. This is a treat.
It's so good to be back.
It is.
This is like when in a baseball game when they're like Chris Sale, Clayton Kershaw, they're playing each other.
Yeah.
We totally are on board with that reference.
We're crosstown classicking right now.
Yeah.
Next to each other.
Edgewater and Evanston all the way.
Yeah.
The
way. Edgewater and Evanston totally have a beef, you guys.
I know.
Who's going to win at the end of the worst?
Neighborhood town beefs, the worst, right? All right, we got this, of course, the segment where we call out all the worst things about society for prizes. And we've got prizes tonight, 312-981-7200. Why don't we start this week, as we do every week, with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, start us off.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When you're sitting near that guy that likes to drum on things.
Mm-hmm.
Or a shaky leg guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm both. Oh, man.
Oh, you're a shaky leg guy?
Well, when I get in the zone. You know, like right now, it's the worst. I'm in the zone. I'm shaking like crazy over here.
I'm totally a shaky leg guy.
Where are you guys going? Where are you taking it to? What's the end?
It just gets you going.
Yeah,
you know?
Like it's like
natural
kinetic
coffee.
Movement.
Yeah. Hmm. It's like a machine. We're generating energy.
Yeah, we're like totally a generator making
and,
our
you know, Pete, like I agree with you because the worst part is like when you ask those shaky leg people to stop, they act like you're the uptight one. Like you're
Well, you are.
Why can't you,
you
just
are.
Groove?
Oh my God, it's every that's every day of my life. Could you stop that? What? You're tapping. What?
No, you don't even notice it sometimes. Notice. It's like, you know,
well in my mind, it's I'm Tito Puente.
Yeah.
I'm going crazy. I'm like dun 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 dun.
You're marching to the beat of your own drum. Which happens to be coming from your hands.
That's right. That's right. All right. Start us off. Erica, what's the worst?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Erica?
Okay, so I don't think that I have a super common name, right? Erica mm-hmm. Reed. That's
sure.
an okay name. Sure. There are a lot of other Erica Reeds out there who clearly, apparently don't know their own email address, because I get emails for so many other Erica Reeds that is so annoying.
Do you forward it back going, wrong Erica Reed?
I do.
You do?
Because so many of them are personal.
No,
like,
I never do it.
You never do?
No, I did at the beginning. And then I'm like, if you have not figured it out, dad who thinks I'm your son,
yeah,
that's on you, not me anymore. I can't keep sending it back going, wrong,
well,
Justin.
Well, Erica's Reed, her doppelganger name is a famous Erica Reed.
It's a famous Erica Reed, which is unfortunate because she's married to Antonio L.A. Reed. She's friends with Beyonce. She has a book.
No,
okay.
So
I get her personal emails.
No way!
So the other day, like last month or so, I got a flight itinerary to like Dubai or something.
Yeah.
And then it showed up on my calendar, like imported into my calendar. So then I started getting all these notifications like, it's time for you to board. It's time for you to make your connecting flight in London.
Where's baby face?
Right.
Do you know where your baby face is?
I'm not even. Wow. What? Yeah.
That's
really
awesome.
It's the worst. I mean, it's great.
It's the worst.
One time
yeah.
she went to Puerto Rico. I got that flight itinerary. I get signed up for like a lot of, you know, like Saks Fifth Avenue mailing list stuff.
You're,
I'm like,
you're potentially going to get an email from Beyonce.
I'm like one day
you're
away.
One day
okay,
away.
Maybe it's not the worst. Maybe it's the best.
Like, well, just be patient. I know it seems like the worst right now, and
yeah.
you got to forward it back, which is so weird too. Hey, this is Erica from Chicago.
I do have a.
What's
there
your
was,
response? What do you say?
I would say hi. I think that you've sent this to the wrong person. Sincerely, Erica from Chicago. Because I've gotten invited to like bachelorette parties before. There's a graphic designer who keeps sending me work. And I'm like, look, Elizabeth, this is 4 years now. You'd think you'd remove right. this email from your address book. But the best was that I got another one of the best, because there's been some.
Oh,
but
God,
I got
so
another
good.
Erica Reed's headshots. And so I got this photographer who was like, hey, Erica, here are your headshots. And I was like, oh, I'm clicking on
I
this.
I want to see what's
And
this
they
is
were
gonna be.
Incredible. They were so good.
Good.
She was like posing with like a fur hood and leather gloves and big sunglasses. And I looked at every single one, and I wrote back to the photographer and I was like, these photos are beautiful, but I am the wrong. I'm not the person in them. And then I was respectful. I did not download them and send them to all my friends
yeah.
like I wanted to.
Right.
But I kept that link until he took it down. He kept it up for like a month. And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to look at those headshots again.
I think that you should send the graphic designing work on and get paid for it, by
yeah.
the way. Yeah, sorry, Justin.
No,
she like one time
yeah.
sent me a picture of frogs and was like, can you match this color?
You're like, I think I can.
Maybe I can.
This is the beginning of a script there.
I have lots of careers, apparently.
My buddy and download regular Adam Witt. He had great this somewhere that same thing happened to him, but he was on a group email.
Mm.
There was like 30 guys getting their fraternity back together for some party, and they got the wrong Adam on there. So he just played along. He replied all to everyone going, that's so you, Stubby, you know, or something like that. And it kept going for like weeks until someone finally is like, that's not the Adam. That's the wrong Adam. And he got called out, but he just kind of played along with it. It became like a piece of performance art.
I don't have the guts to play along with it.
Know,
and there was this one group of women similar. They were taking like, you know, boudoir shots or something. And I was like, I can't, they were so embarrassed. And I was like, listen, ladies, I support this. You guys
so
are going to have the best time ever.
I need to supportively let you down.
Yes.
Let you know you've let a stranger into your midst. All right, Claire, what do you have for the worst?
Well, I'm sure all your readers remember from a couple visits ago when I talked about how much I don't like loud motorcycles and how I want to get a quiet motorcycle on
sure,
the factory line.
Sure.
So tonight at bedtime, I was asking my son what he thinks I should talk about. And he said smoke detectors and how
those
they're
the
too
worst.
Loud.
Too loud. Right.
So we're working on a quiet
yeah.
smoke detector.
Good.
Like an on a,
well,
because,
like, hey, there's a fire. Hey, say there's some smoke.
There's a little just beep. But I set off some smoke detectors while boiling water. I can't believe that happened, but it did. And he panicked and he lost control completely. And
too much beeping, huh?
Yeah. And he was worried even at night. He was worried that they would get set off. We even saw some firemen at the street fair that weekend, and he asked them if smoke detectors go off at night, and they do. So
I don't want him to be afraid of a fireman.
No. Aww. So we'll just get on board with quiet smoke detectors
yeah.
that don't go off at night.
Or maybe instead of quiet, maybe you can make it like a buzzer.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Or
like a nice, like that iTunes, like that iPhone, like beautiful kind of cascading noise.
Ours goes, it's a lady, it beeps, and she goes, fire, fire. It's really creepy. Yeah. And the last time I was on, I complained about my kittens being the worst, and they still are. But same thing, the fire alarm goes off, kittens go crazy.
Yeah.
They don't like it.
Yeah. So
I would go down with
the
quiet
worst.
One.
Yeah.
There you go. 312-981-7200. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We will come back, and we got Paxton on the line. We got a lot of texts as well. Get in line now. 312-981-7200. What's the worst? Stay with us. We're playing the worst here. 312-981-7200. Let's keep it going. Erica Reed, Claire Zolke are here. Paxton, what's the worst, Paxton?
Oh, God, the quiet smoke alarm.
It's quiet smoke alarm. Really getting it. Okay.
Hey, guys, the very, very worst, though, is your when that annoying antique lady ad comes out and you're diving for the off button on the radio, and then you realize that's my new dating range.
So the antique lady on the radio, like, and you're like, oh, that's a prospect.
Okay, I
feel for you, Paxton. All right, man. So thanks for calling.
Lady on the radio,
okay. All right, there you go. All right, the worst is true story 224. The worst is nursing your hydrangea bush back to life after having your 50-pound 4-month-old trample it. True story.
Oh.
And there, he did it. It's a culprit, and they sent a picture of their dog.
Oh, it's not a baby. I was looking forward to like a 50-pound baby.
Yeah, right. Which I guess would be right.
Yeah. Well, now I feel let down.
Well, regardless, hydrangeas are the bane of my existence. We have the Chicago Botanical Gardens is coming on next week. I don't even get it. Hmm. Nothing happened. It's just a green bush.
Yeah.
Like there's supposed to be flowers that come out of this thing. I paid money for this thing. Last year, and now I'm starting to read that. No, you know what they do? It's every other year.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's like good things come to those who wait, Justin.
No, bogus.
Next
that
year.
Is bogus flowering.
Think about it. Yeah. Hydrangeas for days.
You know what the worst part is? You're probably going to get one that's green, so it's like barely a flower, you know?
No, I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm worried that I may do something drastic and just rip the plant.
You're gonna borrow 224's 50-pound dog.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, yeah, there's a place where the dog can trample.
Just my trample.
My front foyer.
My hydrangeas.
All right. All right. 847, the worst, people who over-exaggerate their sneezes.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Guys, I'm that person.
Yeah, I think I might be too, yeah.
You guys are the worst. It is, like, why do you think your sneeze has to be, I mean, we all sneeze. You know,
to say achoo. I like to turn my sneeze into an actual achoo.
My brother does it, and I'm hoping he has a boyfriend, and they've been together for about a year, and I'm hoping that Derek has
worked
it out. Yeah, because not only does he have the pronounced sneeze, he also does a pronounced neck crack, and I can't illustrate this over the air, but it's a really disturbing, like tough guy neck flick. And between the two things, it's too off-putting physical. So,
my problem is that when I sneeze, I'm at the point now where I'm like, you know what? This needs to get out. I'm not doing like into my arm, you know, like none of that. Like you want to be like,
here it is, world.
Like you think if you make it louder, there'll only be one and that's it.
I like to always go, oh, wow, that was... That was surprising. When it wasn't surprising, I knew exactly what it was going to be.
Everyone's on their phone. They're like, this guy just let one. He just had like an epic sneeze on the L.
Do you think anyone's ever just sneezed once?
Yeah, right.
I sneeze like 30 times when I sneeze.
Yeah. Do you do it? Is it psychosomatic in the way that every time you sneeze, it's got to be 6 times?
No. I hate sneezing. I hate everything about it. I think it's unpleasant. It's my least favorite of the things that humans do.
Mm.
But I think I have a lot of allergy things happening, and it's like once it starts, it's like sometimes I'll sneeze for like 15 minutes, and it's like my worst nightmare. My boss has got to the point where she just comes out and she goes, blanket bless.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I only bless the first sneeze. You don't get more. I do burp louder when I burp like audibly because my husband is such a stick in the mud about burps and toots, as we say in my house, that I apply the sneeze rule and I burp like with extra vigor because I have to
I don't know
suppress
that.
It. You know,
you will not be.
I won't be censored.
Your moment.
I want to be who I am.
And I'll let it out.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Why hide that light under a bush? That's right. Under a hydrangea bush.
That's right. All right. Mary 847. Mary says, you know what's the worst? Glitter on anything.
Yeah.
Truth.
Yeah.
The dance studio I used to dance in was a preschool, and it's you have one rehearsal, and then you're covered in glitter for a week.
You always have that one piece like on your forehead or right under your eye.
Yes.
And you can't get it off, but then you're always worried it's going to get in your eye.
You always see it out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah.
Have you ever hugged a burlesque dancer? You're never getting rid of that. It's a part of you.
Who hasn't? I mean, really?
I feel like that's the question that's been on everyone's mind.
Yeah, that sounds like something an investigator asks. So did you hug a burlesque dancer? I need a lawyer.
Can I propose a worst? Yes. And maybe some people out there will hear this and hear my plea. Facebook groups for moms in the suburbs. Are getting to be
very specific.
Close to the worst.
Close
days.
To the worst. Not
but
just there's,
I'm sure every suburb has its Facebook moms group.
So it's a mom group of people who live in a specific region.
Well, yeah, they congregate, and at least the ones that I'm aware of get really angry really fast at the hint of what someone perceives as censorship. There's an epidemic of censorship in these Facebook groups, and people often delete their own posts, but there's a conspiracy that someone takes them down. And so then there's this big follow-up post about what happened to this post, and what am I doing here? And people threatening to leave.
Oh, come on.
So wow. I'm just saying, ladies, there's so many other places. Let's take it out on men as opposed to each other, right. At the very least.
Are the people who take down their own posts the ones who are like, where did this post go? Is it a conspiracy thing? Or is it other people who say, hey, I remember that I read about
Yeah, wouldn't the one person go, oh,
childcare.
I deleted it.
So. No, for some reason. Then they get busy all of a sudden. They're too busy to say.
Sorry, I haven't checked in on this in nine.
To tamp down the drama.
9 days.
Yeah.
Although I really have. I've just been lurking.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, it can be great if you have nothing else to do, but at the same time, it's a little disconcerting. I'm not naming names of suburbs. Not,
Long Grove.
Mm-hmm, Crystal Lake. Morton Grove.
All right, let's keep going. All right. 262 says, the worst is when you don't know which beer is yours.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and then you like have a sip and you're like, I did not have an IPA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a strong one.
Yeah.
That's something that could be at a party where there's two of them. They're the same, well, only a couple sips out of each one.
Yeah.
Same beer. Maybe it's not, you know, it's not a grab bag. It's both a summer shandy.
Right.
You know, everybody knows it's summer shandy. So what are you going to do? Just go for it.
Do you play? I would say just like pick it up and just own it.
Yeah.
Just go for it.
That's your beer now.
Yeah.
And for life.
And if it happens to have somebody else's spittle in it, well, then you're bonded as
there you go.
Yeah.
Something.
708 says the worst is looking forward to the chocolate-covered strawberries at the chocolate fountain after dinner and then watching kids dip their fingers in the fountain and then lick their fingers and go for it again.
Oh, yeah.
What chocolate-covered strawberry fountain are you talking about?
I want to go to that party.
Yeah. That's after dinner.
After dinner, yeah.
So is that at a restaurant? Would that be a restaurant?
They just have it in their dining room. They just invite random kids over who keep putting their hands.
I mean, you know that's going on.
You invited the kids.
Like, yeah.
Why did I invite these kids?
Just look away.
Yeah.
I guess you have small children, so you're not as squeamish about kid hands.
No, I wouldn't
things.
Like it. I'd be more embarrassed, but I don't know.
It's like chips. Kids like reach in a bowl of chips and they touch every chip, and I'm like, well, I'm not eating chips again.
Right, exactly.
At this party.
That's why I never ate at the office, because it'd be like a big communal bowl of nuts or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, forget it.
Somebody did an epic loud sneeze on those nuts.
Claire Zolke, Erica Reed in studio tonight. 312-981-7200. You can see them both at Funny Haha this Friday night, 6 o'clock start.
6:30.
Yes. All right. Getting closer and closer to prime time.
I know. Well, you know what I always say about Funny Haha? I don't encourage you to come for the humor or for the good cause. I encourage you because the show ends at 8 o'clock.
I read something. I might have been Facebook or something about the way to get audiences back out to rock shows and to comedy shows. Just make it earlier.
Yeah.
Like bands need to adjust. You can't put in shows on if you're in a band over 30 where you're like, we're on at 11:30 with the third band.
No, Erica can attest because I get these emails from her. And I come to her shows, but not every single one. And sometimes she'll do a burlesque show that she choreographed that starts at 11 o'clock. And I'm like, I love you.
Yeah.
And I'll have been asleep
for
3 hours.
It's hard for me to even even go to those shows. Being in a band, it's like you got a disco nap all day. Not disco nap. You got a nap all day to make it to 11 o'clock show.
But you're right. If you started the shows at 6, 6.30, 7 o'clock, you get out of that by 8, 8.30.
Then you can have dinner after the show.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst tonight. Stay with us.
What's going down, come the worst, my peoples come first.
All right, let's play the worst second half, 312-981-7200. There is some good stuff tonight. Claire Zelke and Erica Reed in studio tonight. Claire, the creator. Erica, the performer, both performers, of Funny Haha, which will be this Friday night at the Hideout, 630, 1354 West Waubonsia. 773 says the worst is when seagulls attack you for popcorn.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds horrifying.
I think we didn't even talk about that because it's so ingrained how bad that is.
773 says the worst is the look people give you when they find out you have a bidet.
Oh, yeah. I'm giving that look.
You have a bidet? Oh. I stayed in an Airbnb in Tahoe once that had a bidet, and I was like, this is a brand new day. Right?
Brand new bidet.
It was a used bidet, but still.
I think you get it to an age, there's this very certain age of your life where you're like, you know what? I get it.
Yeah. That's
you know
exactly what
it was. I'm going to make a bold declaration right now. The next time I see a bidet, I'm going to use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a line around the corner for that bidet. I mean, it was just like people weren't even staying at the house. And they're like, hey, I heard you got a bathroom upstairs. We're like, hey, that bidet is off limits.
We went on a fancy wine tasting trip with my family a couple of years ago. And we were at a restaurant and there was a Japanese toilet where there were buttons that you pressed. And there were different streams of water. And my mom is a very... this is only fun if you know my mom, but I assume everyone who's listening knows my mom. And she's kind of a fancy lady. And I said, Mom, go use the bathroom and press this one button.
Did she do it?
She did. It was the best.
Did she come out scandalized?
She was mad and laughing at the same time. It's worth it.
That's good.
That's a very trusting. Yeah. She was like, my daughter would never leave me.
She would never make me mad laugh.
No.
Right. All right, let's go to Diana. Diana's on the line. Diana, what's the worst?
Hi, the worst is when you have your 4-year-old granddaughter on your lap and you're sitting at a big table at a bridal shower and she looks up and says, Grandma, why do you have a hair growing from your chin?
Oh.
Kids say the darndest things. Yeah.
I didn't think I had that problem.
Yeah. What did you say?
I'm blonde hair, blue eyes. It's not happening to me.
What did you say? What was the lesson?
I was just like that when you asked me. I was just dumbstruck. I didn't know what to say.
The best part is that it was like a bridal shower, so you were stuck there for 3 hours. And then you had to drive 45 minutes home.
Yeah, it was very awkward. And then a lot of the ladies were laughing, of course, because it was funny. And I'm like, geez, that's what I said. I said, geez, I didn't know. But Grandma doesn't want it there.
No, that's a good answer.
I guarantee that at least 5 of those other ladies also had a big hair growing out of their chin.
Yeah, the next time to say it, it's going to happen to you someday.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Dana. That was good. Thank you. All right, keep going here. 773, trying to put on some good stuff tonight. Trying to put on latex gloves when your hands are slightly damp.
Oh, yeah.
That is the worst. The worst.
You're like, why am I even doing this?
That's brilliant. That might win tonight. Just so well phrased. 815 says the worst is having to work Father's Day and your family grills you the toughest steak in North America. It's Tuesday. You got to let that go. It was 2 days ago. Father's Day was 2 days ago. 214 says the worst is when people mock your new kitchen gadgets, like my new butter and cheese slicer. Why can't you just slice it yourself? Because I don't want to.
Oh my gosh, there's a gadget that slices butter and cheese.
Well, butter, I especially get, because, when you get a cold, what is the worst is when you slice a cold piece of butter and you try to butter your toast and then you pour a big, you're ripping up your toast. So,
yeah.
But I don't know. I might have to see this. Well, this is a judgment call. I need a picture of the butter slicer.
I thought there was some sort of cool factor in the way that you would have a gadget that did something that no other gadgets could do. Like when they came out with that wine opener, it's like, look at this. Burp, burp. It's like a transformer. Burp, yeah. Burp, 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 burp. You're like, the cork is open. Yay.
Changed my life.
I want to know, what is the gadget for your butter? Because I feel like the gadget is no gadget. It's not the fridge.
Just don't touch it.
Yeah.
Or not the fridge.
Like I got this great $39.99. No gadget for the rest of the room.
All right, 312-981-7200-847 says the worst is when you fill your gas tank up in the morning, and by evening the price has dropped a quarter.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm trying to be a zen approach to all that stuff. Like I feel like I spend too much time, especially on like day trips when I go out to see my parents who are out in Wisconsin or my wife's parents in Indiana. I spend way too much of my time being like, okay, let's look at the gas station. And you work it out in your head, and you're like, okay, so it's a $2.10 difference from being downtown Chicago and filling up in Valpo.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I need to – that's worth saving my anxieties.
Yeah. This is like 10 years past the bidet year, like when you start measuring the gas.
Right.
I never look at the gas prices until I need to fill up, but every time I leave the city, I am like, even if I don't need gas, if I'm like only like 1/8 of a tank gone, I'm like, I got to fill it up. It's so cheap.
It's so cheap.
It's like cigarettes. Like I don't even smoke, but when you're in Indiana, like I got to get them. I mean, look how cheap they are.
Let me just get a couple cartons. The worst is walking into a huge spider web. When you, especially when it continues. Like first you're like but then it's just, and there's more. Yeah. Then you're like, this is it. This is that moment this is the movie that arachnophobia. I'm about to die.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's usually the
mankind's
feel.
Falling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. 815 says the worst is when you're in a retail store at the busy customer service counter. There are people standing around, and the next thing you know, a lady begins talking. You don't want to be rude, so you respond, and she gives you the stink eye because you realize she's on a Bluetooth device and wasn't talking to you.
Yeah, she learned. She should learn.
Yeah.
I think that's that's awesome. My dad, I'll tell this story, and it was a point of contention this weekend at Father's Day, but we were at the History Museum, and my dad was talking to a lady who then was on the phone. And we were walking out, and he goes over and he goes, hey, psst, psst, while she's on the phone. And she's like, hello? And he's like, the dioramas are around the corner. You know, you were asking about the dioramas earlier. They're around the corner. And she's like, well, I'm on the phone. And I go, Dad, she's on the phone. You can't do that. He goes, everyone's on the phone these days. And I'm like, you're right. You're so right. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, it's almost like she's just like, I'm going to put this up to my ear. And like, he's like, nah, I figured it out. You're all talking on your phone.
Right. That person on the phone thinks he knows where the dioramas are, but I'm the one who actually knows.
Yeah, let me help. I'm gonna help her out. She needs
help. The problem with this generation is that people are just on the phone. They don't know where the dioramas are.
312. The worst is the death of the shower curtain. Everything is glass now. It died way too soon. Where have all the flowers gone?
Oh, we still have a shower curtain, which is shredded constantly by my three awful kittens.
Yeah.
Oh, why is it bad that the shower... I just don't know. Maybe I need to be educated, but why is it bad that the shower curtain is going away?
Well, I mean, I don't know why. It's just like a nostalgia thing, the shower curtain. I like the glass. I'm a glass
guy. I mean, I'm open to the explanation, but I've never been in a glass-encased shower. I've been like, wish there was a...
There was a curtain.
Remember when this was a curtain? Yeah.
Right.
Maybe if it was a curtain, you feel like you're doing a show.
Hmm.
I would assume, like, the shower curtain on the inside, like, what's not... What do you call that?
The liner.
The liner. I thought that was going that way. When that thing dies, when you know it's time to get rid of that thing because it's mildewy and it's
and
gross.
You never remember where to buy one.
Yeah, that I can understand the worst on that. When those things go skanky, that's the worst.
Yeah.
Or get shredded by your kittens.
Right.
Constantly. They pull the magnets out of them, chew on them. It's like the best game
How
in the world.
How many kittens do you have?
Three.
Three cats is like
that's too many.
Nine children.
Yeah. I'm not sure about
They're
that.
Lovely kittens, everybody. I love them.
706 says, speaking of sneezes, the worst is when your coworker next to you has allergies and constantly sneezing, but had horrible sneeze breath that you can smell from 5 feet away.
Yeah.
And then it's, please don't tell my coworker.
Too late. Your coworker's listening. You just told your
What's
coworker.
What's horrible sneeze breath? Is that a thing? Is like sneezy breath? I don't even know what that is.
Maybe they've been holding it inside, and it's like, I don't know. That is the worst, though. Again, because you can't go home for allergies. It always seemed really, like, unfair to me, because you feel sick, but you're not quite sick. But you just have all the symptoms of being sick.
Yeah.
So
you're just miserable all day.
Right. Tell your boss that I said that your coworker should go home, and that should solve everything.
Yeah.
Everybody read the articles on Yahoo.
You're
sick. It's better to go home than to stay. Yeah. All right. Well, good. I'm glad you're working from home, writer. 708. The worst is discovering your teenager and friends have been hiding beer in your hydrangeas.
Maybe that's your problem, Justin.
That could be it.
That it's totally
those neighborhood kids with their hiding beers in my unflowered hydrangea. Oh,
but you know what? At least your teenager has friends.
There you go. Yeah. Always look on the bright side of life.
What I'm learning about this, too, is that I clearly don't have enough hydrangeas in my life.
Yeah. They're wonderful.
Am I the only one?
They're wonderful. They're expensive. And they only bloom once every other year. So what's the point? Cooking a dinner party spread for a bunch of picky vegan, vegetarian, lactose intolerant, gluten-free, low-carb, peanut allergic, paleo, South Beachy people. That was one and done for me.
Yeah.
That's a lot of things going on.
Yeah,
at one
why didn't
party.
You go to their house?
Yeah.
They're making one a potluck. Is that one person? Like, what are you talking about? Is there one ailment for every person? You got like 12 people coming to your party and they're like, I'm vegan, I'm vegetarian, I'm lactose intolerant.
That's a potluck situation.
Yeah,
for them.
Potluck. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We're going to judge some of this stuff, get the lineup for this week's prizes. It's the worst. Stay with us.
It's going down,
y'all. All right, we're playing the worst. 312-981-7200. Erica Reed, Claire Zelke in studio. Go see them at Funny Haha on Friday night, 6:30. It's going to be great.
It's going to be amazing. We're going to have Steve Gadlin will be on.
What?
Kelsey Huff, Scott Whitehair.
We know Steve Gadlin. Yeah.
Kelsey Belina, as well. Nestor Gomez, Steve Delahoyd.
Of course.
Never heard of him.
Erica Reed.
Just kidding.
It'll be really fun. And it's for a great cause. So come check out Chicago's awesomest, funniest storytellers. And for not a lot of money. Money goes to help kids learn to read in Chicago who read by reading aloud to dogs.
That's the best.
It is the best.
It's a really fun show, even when I'm not performing. I love it.
Thank you.
I love it, too.
Thanks, guys.
Erica, you're not the only one that loves it. I love it, too.
But okay, but Justin, I really love it.
I'm just saying it.
I've seen it more than once.
All right. 847 says the worst is biting into a bitter piece of cucumber. That's a bummer.
What about, how does that compare to watermelon where the inside is mushy?
That's the worst? Because I believe that it's you don't get watermelon that often. I feel like it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, it's here, or I found myself in the right position to get a piece of watermelon. And when it's mushy, it's just like, oh, man.
Because it's the point. That's the whole, the point of the watermelon. But I'm here to say the watermelon so far in 2017, it's been a rough year for all of us, but I would say the watermelon has been superlative so far.
A wonderful watermelon the other day.
Yeah, everyone get on it.
I'm going to try it.
Try it.
Get in on it.
773, the worst is having 9 children wishing you had 3 cats.
Oh.
815, the worst is when you're putting on a pull-on bra over your head and it gets all rolled up in the back.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know.
We're down.
The look on both of your faces. Yeah. Nailed it.
We're there with you.
Wait, why did we get the voice? Like the girl, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. We nailed it. We did
nailed it.
Keep right, struggling with that bra,
847.
Lady.
The worst is getting a red light ticket in the mail from when you stop too far past the line.
That stinks.
Oh, so it's not even going through a red light? You're just like,
you're
the
just
camera's like,
over.
Must not, doesn't that compute? Too far?
Yeah.
Must snap picture? $75. That's terrible. Yeah, you should fight that. That's garbage.
Mm-hmm.
The worst is going down the slip and slide when your kids put it together and you forgot to put water on it.
Oh, no.
That kind of is like a larger, bit, right? That's like a macro version of the latex gloves, basically.
All right, let's see. Here we go. When you're in a small, narrow changing room at the store and you pull off your pants, but all the change drops out of your pockets and goes flying all over the floor and underneath to the next stall. So I gather it up, but the stiff next door won't slide the change back and pretend she isn't there. I had to change shame her and say, excuse me, my change, please.
Oh, my gosh. This is a lady thing. I was surprised that this is a guy thing. Yeah. Women don't carry change in our pockets normally. I don't know. There's a lot. I'm learning a lot right now.
That other person was probably like, this is the moment.
I needed these extra 72 cents to pay
to
for
buy
this
pants.
Tank top.
Yeah.
Right. The worst, 630 says, and all true, who could or would make this up? That's why I love the worst. They're all based in facts and emotion. Wow.
Yeah.
Broke it down. I love it. Getting on the elevator alone in the first floor lobby after lunch, and a bunch of people get off, one of whom left a gaseous gift that envelops you as the doors close.
Mm-hmm.
When a crowded elevator door opens and you're 6 inches eye to eye with someone getting on who never considered someone might be in the elevator trying to get off.
Mm. Yeah.
Usually a woman dragging a bag on wheels way behind them on the crowded, dark, narrow walkway to board the train home in Union Station during rush hour, slowing down on the tollway to pay a toll during rush. These are all this person put together. A lot of different. Jerry's gone crazy. Jerry.
Wow.
Jerry's got 6 or 7 of them here. Slowing down on a tollway to pay a toll during rush hour and feeling the car dragging and pulling as you stop. It's a flat tire.
Oh.
Oh.
Wow. Mm. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Okay, we'll keep going here. 312-981-7200. We got one more minute of reading this. I have a ton of these, so we're going to miss out tonight on a couple of these. The worst is getting on the Ryan after work today, hearing it's an hour to 95th, and that afternoon coffee has to exit now.
Oh, yes. That is the worst. I've been in that situation.
506, when my grubby little paw starts sticking to the phone screen because I can't stop texting while eating a plate of ribs.
Oh,
you know what? You always think it's going to be a good idea. Same with driving. You think, I'm just going to drive and eat this plate of ribs. Bad idea? It's a bad idea.
I keep my ribs and my laptop separate, but I've gotten a lot of peanut butter in my trackpad, so I get it.
I can tell that about you. You got some peanut butter in your trackpad.
That's so good. Wow. All right. All right. I think we got it, right? I think we got it. All right. I think we got it.
I'm feeling good about the worst. Yeah.
All right. Good. There's a lot of great stuff coming in right now, too. All right.
Let's go for another hour.
The worst is when your hubby tries to take his hoodie off in the mall and his t-shirt comes off, too.
Oh.
So his hairy back chest is exposed for all to see. And your daughter and your friends try to hide.
I think that's the best.
I know. I want to see pictures. Picture didn't happen.
Yeah.
All right. Tonight we've got two Lou Malnati's gift certificates to give away. Lou Malnati's, home of the Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumaldotties.com. And we've got the complimentary pass for 2 adult and 2 children. General admission to Sycamore Speedway this 2017 race season. Visit sycamorespeedway.com. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that is cool.
I would love to do that. That's just that every time I fun. Read that, I'm like, that does sound fun.
It
brings me back to my childhood. Like, I feel like that would be a fun family thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe someone should get that for you for Father's Day next year.
I know. I probably should have maybe brought it up a couple days ago.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Also, it's not cheap. I learned. You know, that's like more. I've learned that's more than like $50 for like rent out a Speedway.
All right, there you go. Yeah. All right, here we go. So we are going to give. Let's do this. Let's give Diana, who called in about her granddaughter and the hair on her chin.
You know what? She deserves it just for going to a shower. Women will never be free until done going to showers.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we give her the passes to the Sycamore season? And because then, you know, we can give it to her family. And if they say, no, we want this grandma, at least it takes pressure off the hair on the chin. Right?
I hope she goes without her lousy grandkids and just goes and is free for
by herself,
a while.
Just watches a race.
Yeah.
Gets in
the
race
mode.
She deserves it. Diana, thank
you
for calling.
Feel the wind through the hair.
For the pizza, 773 or 847, the worst when people over exaggerate their sneezes.
Mm-hmm. Achoo. Achoo.
We all do it. Or maybe I do. 847, thanks for that. And first place tonight, another pizza, 773, trying to put on latex gloves.
Yes!
When your hands are slightly damp. So good. Erica Reed and Claire Zolke can be seen at Funny Haha this Friday night at the Hideout 1354 West Waubonsie. The show starts at 6:30. There's a great lineup of great Chicagoans. Erica, Claire, great to see you. Thanks for coming in and playing
Thank
the worst
you,
night.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks for having
it's
us.
The best.
All right, that's going to do it tonight for The Download. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. All right, Patty Vasquez coming up next. Tomorrow night on the show, very excited, the shirtless guitar player from Def Leppard. How cool is that, right? And you know exactly when I say that. You're like, who? Oh, yeah, that guy, right? Phil Cullen. But you don't know his name. You just know the shirtless guitar player.
Can we combine him with the underwear guitar player in Times Square? Whatever his name is.
Yeah, the Naked Cowboy.
Naked Cowboy, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, so shirtless guitar player tomorrow night on The Download. All right. Patty Vasquez is coming up next. Jump
in. What do you want to do? Hello. How are you doing?
Hey.
As you know, right now, John Tatey is on from the AV Club.
I see him standing right here.
Lingering, hovering over you.
You know, I get the worksheets from the Chicago Film Office, and they throw your the AV Club show on there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. We just met. He's just talking like
a microphone.
Having a conversation with you across the room. Yeah.
Congratulations on that. That's great.
Thank you very much. Yeah. We just met the Illinois film people, and they're wonderful.
Yeah.
God, they're so eager to help. I had no
idea. Oh yeah. Oh no. Huge. Right. Well, I think
they're
like,
a good resource,
like 18
right?
Chicago shows filming here. Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago, all that
so
stuff.
I was a little flattered that they were so enthusiastic about my little
show. She came on. Christine Dudley came on, and she talked about some of the shows that were coming up this summer, and she mentioned your show.
Aw. Well, thank you for telling me that. There That's so nice.
Yeah. So you got an advocate in the Illinois Film Office.
Okay, well, I'll take it.
Take it. Mm-hmm. All right, what's on the show tonight?
We also have Representative Mark Batnick on at 11:30 to do, you know, I heard Berkman on your show, Senator Berkman. And I think that nothing's going to happen, so that's cool.
Isn't that weird? I mean,
it's so weird.
I was reading a whole thing today about most states, I think it's like 40 of them in the union, have government shutdown clauses in their constitutions.
Right.
So if you don't do a budget,
that's
you get to shut down. There's no judges. There's no injunctions. You just get there. And that's Minnesota had that happen not too long ago, New Jersey. So it's amazing to me that the state of Illinois just blows through deadlines with no repercussions whatsoever.
Well, what they've done, well, they have, but also they've done stopgap and bridge budgets in order to make sure that schools get open. And as you mentioned, with court decrees, they are forced to pay certain service providers. So most people don't necessarily feel that it's happening.
They found a way to take away the urgency from the taxpayers.
Well, and I think that you made a good point, I think, or Senator Berkman did about how, you know, people are already not interested in politics, and this is just making it worse, throwing their hands up and going, well, then what difference does it make? And that's really disappointing. That's why I keep going to Springfield, is that it does matter, and we should all be involved.
Are you
going to
go down this week?
Yeah, I'm going down for the first and the last day of the special session. I figured I couldn't think of any other way to wrap my arms around. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be there for the whole 10 days. I want to, you know, do bad things to myself. Like eat way more horseshoes. I mean, eating all the horseshoes in Springfield. Have you ever had a horseshoe?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, it's gravy and fries and meat on Texas toast.
Sounds good.
It's a little bit like a poutine.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Springfield poutine.
Springfield poutine. Which oddly sounds like what they're doing down there is a lot of poutine in Springfield. So that's and also we have Jerry Nunn, who is going to talk to us a little about all the events for Gay Pride Fest this week. And, well, it's just a lot of fun stuff.
All right.
Tarot card readings later, so.